Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 572 of Vidigame Apocalypse. I'm your host, Michael Raparos, coming to you from the Mikey Cox Memorial Studio of the Airwaves. If you want it to be the York Cox Memorial Studio of the Airwaves, go to patreon.com/lasertime.
Pretty good.
And join us at the $20 level. 20 bucks, unless you just want bonus shows and don't need a studio named after you, in which case, join us at the $5 level.
Then just named after your Cox.
Yeah, who's joining me?
Chief Cork Soaker, Chris Antista.
And
Alan Matthew exists.
Is, yes. And special guest,
Demon Prince, Tony Wilson.
Ooh, a reference. Reference to a game out this week, Sandland. But yes, tell us about Framework.
Yeah, Framework is a channel on YouTube where I do video essays about games. I will not be covering Sandland there. However, you can hear my voice talking about Sandland over on IGN on a bunch of guides, so check that out.
You guys talking about the Sandman, Adam Sandler? Who's Beelzebub?
So I assume you're not covering it because it does not have the sexy asses of Stellar Blade.
Oh, yeah, like, that's where my channel's all boobs all the time. All boobs all the time.
Michael's throwing that on Tony and the internet and not our time at Games Radar.
But if you go over there, by the time you hear this episode, the most recent thing will be a short I did with, like, Fallout, talking about the show a little bit and how it did a really good job of showing, like, leaving the vault. And if you stay tuned for just a couple more days, I might have some other Fallout thing coming out. We'll see. Some other thoughts on one of the greatest games ever made, in my opinion. But which one could that be?
Well, once again, I think I may have mentioned this before, but like when I was super into comics and the Spider-Man movie 20 years ago is number one, and I go into multiple comic stores, I'm like, is this moving more comics? And they're like, no, none. It's worse than ever. and I asked again like 10 years later, and it's the same thing. A good show is... We're at that point. We saw it with Cyberpunk, and I think that had other reasons to be reappraised. But Fallout 76 doubling its like player base overnight over a good show.
I think they said 1 million people in a single day.
Yeah. 1 million people on Fallout 76 in a single day. 5 million people across Fallout games in a day.
That's fucking incredible. And like, and it also because like we all sort of knew 76 had a rocky launch or years. And I'm sure it's improved now, and I'll never touch it. But, yeah, other people are.
There's, like, one or two comments on that short, too, of people being like, terrible show. Totally mishandled the vibe of the game. And everyone's like, we didn't watch the same show, my guy. What are you talking about?
I think a lot of, judging by the anger that I see on Twitter, not to get too spoilery, but I feel like a lot of people stopped watching when Shady Sands showed up. And, like, if that's you, maybe go back to it and see how they actually resolve that.
I hope someone is unfamiliar with Fallout and they think Shady Sands is, like, a private detective.
Shady Sands.
Or Shady Sands, Village.
Private eye. anyway, what are we doing? YouTube.com/framework video. That's where you can find it. I do work that I'm really proud of, and I am grateful for the chance to come in here and just plug it. I like coming on the show just because I like coming on the show, but, you know, I'll always take the chance to plug it, so thank you.
All right.
I endorse it.
Well, thank you. Thank you again for joining us. For this week's Top 5, which was inspired, of all things, by Chris being spurred to discover Blasphemous, I think, after last week's show.
It's so good.
Or the show before.
It's so good. Yeah, I'm so happy you're on board.
It was not only the show before, like, I was enjoying Blasphemous so much, it was the only thing that tore me away, not entirely, from Helldivers. I reached a point in Blasphemous, I've been playing through, and I had not been memorizing all the names. The Lair of the Shady Library.
And
I've unlocked most of the map. I don't know what to do next. It's kind of hard to look up what to do. And I was like, hey, Chris, the little devil on my shoulder said, this game didn't cost you anything because it's on PS Plus. Blasphemous 2 is on sale, and...
And it's like better Brendan in from the every Crawl possible way.
Said it's even better. Why not go back to unlocking parts of the map, which you thought was the most enjoyable, instead of trying to finish 100% Blasphemous? So I think if you might be that type of person, but like I've only had this experience when I was like writing about games. The ability to play one game in a series right after another. My mind was just blown by all these, not only by... I loved Blasphemous 1. and the additions they put in there, like, I wasn't even asking for that. I had no, but this improves the previous game to make it not necessarily unrecommendable, but there's like no going back. So like, yeah. I thought initially most improved sequel, but I didn't necessarily mean that. It was more about how do you get something that's classic to a masterpiece? And
yeah,
so we're talking like improved games, or what do we call it? Nailed it, or
yeah,
get it, achieving perfection.
Sequels that nailed it.
Yep.
Kind of.
Perfected sequels. Like, and not like, you made it also clear, like, this can't be something like
GTA 3.
Yeah, GTA 3 or Zelda going to Ocarina of Time, because, like, it has to be, like, perfecting a style of gameplay rather than just throwing it out entirely.
That's an important distinction, because then, like, Fallout 2 to Fallout 3 wouldn't, you're saying that wouldn't qualify here.
Yeah, exactly.
That's an important distinction.
And I also don't know that any Fallouts are on my list of this. how improved are they, really? I'm sure someone could make the case, but these are we came up with our games. I think we were going to try and go three apiece, keep it shorter with two alternates in case we overlap. But just get our discussion points out. What we think are the most... A game that iteratively brings something that's beautiful into something magical. That's what I was trying to go for. And that's what... Yeah, Blasphemous 2, I'm not going to nominate because there's actually a couple things that frustrate me. When you play a game like that, like, not only back-to-back, like, 1 second you're playing the first, and then they switch all the buttons on you. Holy shit, am I still frustrated? Am I still frustrated?
If I want to say, because I don't know when I'd get a chance to say it super quick, one of the most brilliant things about that game, about Blasphemous 2, is you get to choose your weapon at the beginning, right? Do you want like a standard sword? Do you want the heavier thing? Or do you want the lighter, quicker thing? Right? And they're all, you know, you think, oh, this is weapon choice. It is. However, each one of those weapons also has a Metroidvania element. Like, the heavier thing can hit these bells. The I think the knives have, like, kind of a warp dash kind of thing. They can all do a special thing. So your weapon choice also determines which area you are going to go to first. And the game is built so that whichever you choose is a viable path to then get the other things you need until all three of those paths converge for the rest of the, like, Metroidvania experience. It is one of the most brilliant executions of Metroidvania exploration I've ever seen in that first half, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, I gotta choose a weapon? How do I know? And, like, you eventually just get all the weapons. And
exactly. And, because they're your Metroidvania power-ups. They're not just weapons. Yeah, and the art is beautiful. Every new thing that, like, just descends out of the shadows, you're like, what is this? I don't know, but I'm gonna kill it because it's a, you know, crying pus baby or whatever it is, you know?
I think Blasphemous qualifies, but because it was the inspiration and I'm not haven't come anywhere near completing it, I'm leaving it off my nominations, but do we got? Who gets to start?
We are doing a debate style top five. If you're unfamiliar, we'll just kind of go round robin, suggesting possible entries and just sort of try to winnow this down through debate. Let you in on the conversations that go on behind the scenes.
Yes,
and also I don't have to gather sounds for this.
That's true. I mean, you could.
Guess what? I can make my own sounds for one of mine. Oh. So you're welcome. Mm.
And I'll start. Can I start?
Sure, go right ahead.
So I want to start with one that I think won't get a lot of pushback, and that's Super Mario 3.
That's a good one, yeah. Because talked about that one.
I love Super Mario 2 more than most people, and I think it's a great sequel, but it is just from back in the day where, like, we can't sell the same thing twice or even build upon it. We've got to throw it all away, and we all know Doki Doki Shut Up, but like, but a lot of games did that. And so the real follow-up to Super Mario 1 is Super Mario 3. It feels a lot more like that game.
Yeah. And I would say even the Japanese Super Mario 2 isn't the real follow-up.
No, it's
just like
sucks.
A level pack. Yeah.
Yeah. And it sucks. It's the worst. It's the absolute
trolling.
Worst.
It's just a trolling thing. It's what Mario Maker is now, but from then.
Right. To think back that it took two games to get there to, like, maybe we should iterate on the thing that really blew people's minds and blow people's minds even harder. And I feel like I give Mario 3 short shrift. I can even pull up my Game Boy Advance copy. I do love it. If you think of it as the first sequel to Mario 1, it's mind-blowing. Yes, it takes a lot of things from Mario 2, picking up stuff, but, like, just Mario 2 didn't even have power-ups. And this just adds a shitload more. The overworld map, giving you the illusion of a choice of where you go. And my absolute favorite that Mario 2 left out, surprises. like weird ass surprises everywhere. They're, like, kind of all you had in Mario 2 was like warps, and maybe you'll pull up a radish that's attached to a 1-up. But there's just surprises all over the map that reward you for like talking to people about the game. It makes it, what makes it a magical experience, and it does that by creating that overworld that no 2D Mario game ever left out ever again.
That's true.
Most 2D Mario games didn't leave out ever again.
There has to be one or two that
there are.
Yeah.
There are, but like most did not. Like even like Mario 2 on the Game Boy has that shit. An overworld in Mario 2 is a 2D Mario game is almost required, and it doesn't make a ton of sense because if you're like me, I'm gonna play every level, and you could force me to play every level anyway because I'm gonna. But because they made that fucking overworld, what I think Mario World is a better game than Mario 3. But, like, if you didn't have the overworld, the idea of perfecting a level or discovering its secrets, you wouldn't be able to do if it were just following the linear course of every other 2D platformer. And that's all in Mario 3. And holy shit, the Koopalings. I love the Koopalings. I feel Mario World mini-bosses are more badass. But, like, holy shit, new bosses. Just try and imagine pitching a game where, like, and then after the end of each level, you fight a boss. Which boss? The same one. Continuously. over and over again.
My only argument against this game is a weak one, and it's one you've already cited, is like Super Mario World, I think, actually truly perfected that formula, but like I've also gone on record saying I actually prefer Super Mario 3, so like, yeah, I mean, I can't push back that hard. It's like, well,
I think I enjoy World for like, one of the things I left out were things of that were like completely boosted by the platform you're on. The colors, the music, the amount of levels they could put in World, that's all kind of dictated by the Super Nintendo. The formula was kind of refined by Mario 3. And just so I'm with you, Matt. I enjoy Mario World more. It might be my favorite 2D Mario game. But Mario 3 is just an inarguable massive leap forward from two great games that are already amazing. Gelling into something completely wonderful, and they almost never strayed from that format again until they go 3D.
Any objections to putting this on our list of potential finalists from anyone?
No.
Got it out of the way. See? Didn't good make you wait.
Good for you.
Good for you. I got your Christian Bale. Great inflection.
That's like early internet shit now.
Yeah.
Terminator.
Where the fuck is Shane?
Salvation?
Yes, Terminator. It's the only reason people remember that awful fucking movie. Yeah. Who's up next?
I'll go.
Go, Mickey.
I'm going to nominate Mortal Kombat 2.
Oh, fuck me.
Because Mortal Kombat 1 was a huge success and a lot of fun. Ultimately, not a great game if you took a lot of time to play it and try to master it and eventually realize, like, all the fighters are more or less exactly the same, except that they have different special moves and fatalities. And so once, like, it's kind of like all the great stuff is on that superficial level, and when you try to drill down, it's not good. Mortal Kombat 2 retooled a lot of that stuff and improved it and made the characters have different attributes and different strategies you could use with them. And it also, like you said with Mario, it opened the floodgates to like a lot of secret stuff. Like there was secret stuff in the first game. There was a lot more in two. There were like, you know, at least two different pits to discover. I think three actually. There was the stuff that you could do to like make the toasty guy pop up.
Uppercut, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe was it always with the uppercut?
I
thought it was randomized. The toasty.
Mm-hmm. Still, yeah, there were secret characters. I mean, The real secret fest was 3, but I think 2...
But 3 really needed to be refined a lot further.
Yeah, 3 was not as good as 2. Like, 2, I think, was especially with the early 2D games, like was definitely the high water mark.
I think so.
Which one
I think
introduced Baraka? Which was Baraka was 2 or 3?
That was 2.
Okay, then it's on the list.
Baraka and Jax, yeah.
Baraka is so much earlier than I think he is in Mortal Kombat history. Like, in my brain, he doesn't show up till, like, 6, 7, you know what I mean? Like, it takes a while.
He has had the most PS2 era launches as a character.
Yeah, maybe that's why, because he's been changed. But, like, in my brain, he doesn't show up until, like, PS2 era.
Well, like in the last game, he was a good guy most of the campaign.
Yes.
And let's say
I'm
Michael,
not a monster. I'm just disfigured.
Last game, whatever that sand guy was, I don't remember his name. He gets one of the, honestly, I think it's my favorite fatality I've ever seen. Geras, that's his name, right? Mm-hmm. The sand.
The time guy.
The time and sand, whatever, where he reaches like back in time to hand someone their own head. Or he reaches forward in time. Like the character, he hands them their own head. He reaches into a portal,
right.
Hands them their own head, and they look really confused. And then a moment later, Geras reaches through a portal, rips their head off. And it's
nice,
like,
nice.
It is.
But I'm not decapitated yet. You will be.
It is. It is. I think my favorite fatality. It is so good. You have been decapitated through time.
Let's say Michael was losing this argument about Mortal Kombat 2's influence, and I think you're not. Mortal Kombat 1. You're right. I played the shit out of it, but there was not really a lot to do. Like like doing everyone's fatality was about as much as you could learn about the game. Mortal Kombat 2 changed Nintendo.
Yep. it made Nintendo them relax their blood policies.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, the only fighting game of the era that I would say had a more drastic shift, it would be like Street Fighter. Like, that's the only one where it's more from one to two.
But that, that came up. We were talking about that, but that's not really the spirit of this list. So if it was like, hey, sequel that established the game or redefined the game, Street Fighter 2 wins hands down. Right?
Now, hold on. The way I argue is like Street Fighter 2 qualifies, but I think in this debate, you would lose because, as I'd like to remind you, there are 8 Street Fighter 2s. And all of them,
they kept
which one are you talking about? And that's which one fair. Are you talking about? They improved like molasses.
Turbo 2, add guacamole and an apple pie.
Yes. Yes. And then like, well, they must have got it all right in Street Fighter 3. And like, you know what? I'm not qualified to make any of these arguments, especially as someone who spent so little time with one.
3 was a step back in some ways.
They did the thing where like, we're going to throw out the gameplay that we've carefully honed. Yeah. Yeah. Over all these other games, I would say Street Fighter Alpha 3 is a much better game than Street Fighter 3.
Yeah.
So I know Street Fighter 2 qualifies, but I think in terms of it sort of loses. It was more popular, and it was more popular, but not having those stupid pressure sensitive buttons for the most part. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, Street Fighter 1 was like it was popular, but it was also a gimmick game. And if you try to go back and play that now, it's a really bad game.
Yeah,
like
it wasn't
hard
popular.
To play.
I have to disagree.
It
was
popular
not.
Enough to get a sequel.
None of my friends knew about Street Fighter 1 until Street Fighter 2 came out, and by that time, Street Fighter 1 became this weird oddity of like, did you know that even existed? And then we sought it out.
I did see the game, but only in the Tupac Shakur movie Juice. I really never saw it anywhere else.
That movie's so fucking good. Dude.
You got the juice now, man.
I love that movie.
I saw it in the Sinbad Genie movie, actually, myself.
Yeah. Jesus. We're talking about the Mandela Effect on 3020.
Okay, so like
Mortal Kombat 2.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat 2, I think it'll be on the list for now. I think we'll see if it makes that 5. We'll see if it makes that 5. Tony, do you got an option here?
Yeah. All right. I have sound effects for this. So what? Michael, you can act like you're pressing a button, and then I'll
going to do it Michael Winslow style.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you ready for this? All right, here we go.
Uh-huh. Lord.
Listen, I know this is not going to make the list, but I have to, I would be remiss to not bring up Banjo-Tooie, because Banjo-Tooie is my single favorite game of all time, and I genuinely think, in terms of carrying things forward into a sequel and perfecting mechanics, it is the best sequel of all time in terms of what makes a sequel. It is the only game, at least that comes to mind for me, where there is no power drain. You immediately begin the game being able to do every single thing you learn to do over the course of the last game, which, name me another one, you know what I mean? Like, I cannot name another one that does it. I'm sure it exists.
It was rough playing Blasphemous, where like, holy shit, yeah. Completely underpowered.
Like imagine, you know, Metroid's the easy go-to, right? Samus gets her powers drained at every start for some reason.
And we're kind of disincluding Super Metroid because we don't want to talk about it this many weeks in a row.
So like, but imagine if she started a game, oh no, you have everything you always had. And now we've just given you even more.
Mm-hmm. That is how Banjo-Tooie is. It also expanded out all of its levels. It has some of the most brilliant interconnected level design I've ever seen. The way the levels are connected via like spots that physically touch on the map, a train system, warp system. They are so beautifully imaginative. The music is some of the best you will ever hear of any era. And not only that, the music is modulated in a way where there's one overworld theme, but depending on where you are in the overworld, the instrumentation changes. So tune, but if you're in the Aztec area, it's going to be a little more like, you know, jungle beats and low whatever. You get off to the fire, Hellfire Peaks, and it starts incorporating like more brass and like a xylophone for the ice, but it's all the same tune, just different instrumentation. So from every perspective, from just every gameplay perspective, level design, sound and music, your specific gameplay input, I just think as a sequel, it does the thing you want a sequel to do. Improves upon every single thing in a way that, for me, has never been matched. And like I said, extremely biased, because it is my favorite game of all time.
I mean, you are getting... Because I love Banjo-Kazooie so fucking much. And I would totally vote for this if this was like a Mario 64 sequel.
It's okay if it doesn't make the list. It's okay.
No. But I'm telling
but
you...
But I just, like, I gotta get it out there, because it's like... I'm an evangelist for Banjo-Tooie.
Your only fault here was making an appeal to a bunch of people who may not have played it. And given where my age was I had an N64 before I had a PlayStation. Banjo-Kazooie was mind-blowing. I played the absolute shit out of it. But that game in and of itself pretty much wore out its welcome with me. And N64 cartridges were expensive.
Yeah.
And I was just playing shit. And I did finally play Tooie a long time ago. And that's why you're blowing my mind right now. Because, like, you are absolutely correct. But I just experienced so little of it.
Like I said, this is just me taking the platform while I have it.
All right.
I have plenty of others that are going to line up that are, like, I'm sure of the other ones, like, I've written down. I can almost guarantee at least two were making the list. So, like, it's all good. I take every opportunity to tell people to play Banjo-Tooie so that you can be as disappointed as I was by Nuts and Bolts.
By Nuts and Bolts. holy shit.
A game that, if it was anything but a Banjo-Kazooie sequel, I would take no issue. But you tell me, beautiful. That's supposed to be the follow-up to one of the most incredibly crafted 3D platformers of all time, and now it's just a vehicle building thing.
It's a Tie the Tasmanian Tiger sequel, the best one we've ever seen. I'm with you, but I know it won't make the final cut anyway, so I can't pass this along to the next round.
I said my piece. I'm the Gary Johnson of this.
I feel like if the three of us were about 10 years younger, we'd probably get your back on this one, Tony.
Hey, last week. Listen, it's okay. Never. Someone's going to comment on this and be on my team, and I'll be like,
"You made a good case."
We'll make our own top.
I'll give it a vote just based on that.
Oh, so it's in the runner-up pile.
That's a no from me, dog. I'm going to kill it.
Hey, listen, Banjo-Tooie, best also-ran you'll ever play.
All right, I'm gonna throw my first one out here. Right. I'm gonna go in heavy hitter shit.
Make it strong.
This is one I actually got from Michael, because originally when I misunderstood the intention of the list, I had suggested Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2. Mm-hmm. But Pro Skater 2 is more like, hey, that redefines and really resets expectation and kind of established the blueprint for Tony Hawk games. But 3 perfected that formula. I think Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3, you might argue, is probably the pinnacle of that series in many, many ways. Big, huge open world or open maps. I believe that one did have like environmental destruction, like big changes to the maps if you did certain things.
We're talking opening up the airport hangar, stuff like that.
There were like grind two levels. This thing and
there were like
crash.
Two levels in each Tony Hawk game that did it, where like almost every level in Tony Hawk 3 did that.
Yeah, exactly. It had a ton of levels, a lot of variety of the levels. It was wacky without being just kind of stupid over the top. Like, I where think it that's went, where yes. it nailed the CMYK.
Those are colors. CMYK.
That's a printer cartridge.
It nailed CYK. That brand of humor nail it. I think Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 is a strong contender for like for the spirit of what this list is about, it really nailed it.
Now,
right?
Shit, man.
Did three also introduce building your own park, or did that come later?
But no, actually, I think that might have been like...
That early?
You're right.
It might have been like Dreamcast version of one or something like
that. Yeah, 2X or something like that. I don't know when that happened, but I only remember that happening when it went online with Thug. And then you could play other people's parks.
I'll be honest, I never really engaged much with that part of the game. It first appeared in 2.
In 2, okay.
Yeah.
So again, 2 set in the blueprint, but not perfecting it.
But Matt, here's a wrench in your plan.
Uh-oh.
Because I'm with you on this. That might be like the just super high point of Tony Hawk. And if you've never heard him tell the story, I saw it on multiple podcasts because, like, you know, I was making okay money. I'm the best skater in the world. I don't have to worry. I'm making 6 figures a year. And then, like, Tony Hawk 3 is coming out and Activision shows up and hands him his residual check. And he's like, I just want to warn you, it has a lot of zeros. And he looks at it, like, what the fuck? He's like, all 3 of the games are in the top 10.
Damn.
Right now. Mm-hmm. Because we were all playing this shit. And this is like right when I went into a dorm. So I got better. I was playing not necessarily strangers, but a ton of people and getting better all the time. Mm. Matt, what about Tony Hawk 1 and 2 Reloaded? Or whatever that thing was.
I didn't even consider like remasters on this thing, but I still think.
But I'm only pointing that out because three added the revert. With the revert was super important for chaining combos.
Right, 3 added the revert. Yeah.
They added the revert to 1 and 2 remastered, even though it didn't exist in those games.
So my counterpoint to that, or am I thinking
of the manual that was
the manual was introduced?
The manual was 2, the revert was 3. Oh,
okay. Yeah, there were no instructions for how to play the game until 3.
Here's the biggest thing that was missing from that 1 and 2 reboot, Chris, was 3. It should have just been the Tony Hawk trilogy. It should have been 1, 2,
yeah,
and 3.
You were not going to be able to do that. It's Tony Hawk 3 and 4 remastered. Like, 4? Isn't that when you got off?
About 4.
You got off your board and things started
four's
to get
not,
weird?
4's not bad, but it's not as good as 3.
Not as beloved.
Yeah, 3
was... not the greatest hits as many times.
3 was something I could not put down. I wasn't in any way getting disappointed with the series until 4. Like, 3 was just like, how can this keep getting better?
Yeah.
On an annual basis. Shit, I'm voting for Tony Hawk 3.
Any objections to 3 going on the finalist list?
No. It was a bummer, I remember, because I got to play the Dreamcast versions of Tony Hawk. And that was the first time I had to go to PlayStation to play the slightly less good-looking version.
I felt I had more responsive controls.
Yeah, it was a better control scheme. And I got good on Tony Hawk from the PlayStation.
And this is a Sega guy talk. I love the Dreamcast controller so much. But like, yeah, and you know. All right, going back around, Chris, I think you started.
Oh, what do I do? No one's against me yet, so this is very weird for our debates.
Well, you've only put in one entry so far.
I don't feel threatened in any way.
There's still plenty of time for us to be against you.
I don't know where to bring this. Did you try and discount Monster Hunter World, Michael?
Okay, so
I mean,
this is my... This is my alt.
I am here to get your
back on this, Chris. This is the weirdest fucking bizarre episode. This is my alt entry, but given... Now my understanding of Michael's list, this is the poster child for this list.
It is on a new engine. It does different things, but its skeleton is absolutely every Monster Hunter ever made, and I can prove that to anybody who played Sunbreak afterwards, which looked a lot more like previous Monster Hunters, but still used the innovations from World.
I think the biggest argument in favor of this, Chris, is like, the Monster Hunter games were very popular in Japan and had a lot of players. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the number of new players to the franchise that World brought in, it's like, okay, people finally understood, they finally nailed it, what the developers were going for. And they're like, I get why people love this series. Like, Monster Hunter World did that, unlike any previous title in the
series. It looked like a modern game, which it hadn't for about 15 years.
That's true.
Yeah.
But it played the same. And a lot of the bullshit that, like, again, things I wasn't asking for. Like, I don't have to sit down and combine potions or combine herbs and all this shit. It's like automatically just collect them, know what they are and collect them, and it'll automatically combine for you. You can even set to what degree you want them to do that. And like, I don't know why, but I wouldn't even have thought to ask this far into Monster Hunter. This improves improvements I couldn't foresee. And I was working on the game and didn't recognize some of these things as a problem. Yep. It still had some of those issues, like, would you like to play multiplayer? Well, you'll need to take a conveyor belt, but you could still go up to something and press a button and instantly be there rather than actually have to walk to it.
It did the thing where, like, if you ran out of resources on a mission, you would just go back to a campground and kind of go in your tent and mess with some stuff. You didn't... It made a lot of stuff. It was still very clunky, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It made it sort of acceptably clunky, though. You know,
it turned it into a global success, and it didn't change any of the DNA, really. Like, what is it Monster going to be like if you don't have a load screen in between 9 zones in a map? Fine. It's going to be totally fine. Yep. And there's ways to shake the monsters. You don't have to depend on a load screen to save you. It made it a next-gen experience, but, like, I feel like that it could have happened earlier. It just so happened that it happened on the PS4, Xbox One era, and probably even better on Steam. Monster Hunter World, even though it's the Monster Hunter game I played the least, because it has... I think it's harder to develop for, given, like, its next-geniness. But I love it. It's the best Monster Hunter so far. I don't know. I enjoyed Sunbreak more. I honestly did. But that's because it was on the Switch, and it backtracked a little, and everything just loaded way faster.
I prefer World still. I think World is a bit meatier. No pun intended. There's a little bit more to World.
I think Sunbreak's expansion was bigger than Iceborne, so I ended up playing it a lot more.
Was it?
But it's like, I don't love farming mushrooms and shit like that, and Sunbreak added that back in, and it's like, I don't know that I love farming as much as you think I do. I like exploring and playing. So I'll give it to World.
I'm not about to go all change my mind on anybody, so don't worry. But I am, you know, Matt mentioned like how that game convinced people, like, oh, I get what this whole thing is about. I have personally not yet had that epiphany. I still do not understand why the, like, I look at it and I'm like, I
now
just do
everyone's
not get
against
it.
Me. Oh,
so I'm not.
Rise
I'm not
was
saying
the
I'm
only
against.
One I started to like, and that was mainly because it cuts Rise, down the funny. Amount of time that you chase after the monsters so much. Like, that's most of my experience with Monster Hunter is I beat on this thing for a while and it runs away and I have to tag it and I have to follow it halfway across the map to find its hiding place. I have to beat on it again and it runs away again.
You get a dog,
and then I follow
you get a dog
it
and
this
rise.
Gets on for like 20, goes on for 20 minutes or so.
My thing, so like, I'm not necessarily voting against it. I cannot vote for it because I have not had that moment yet where it clicked with me. And I have tried.
Said the same thing about Donald Trump.
And a lot, I already said I'm the Gary Johnson of this, so, you know, we're just going to keep that up.
All right, so that sounds
and
like
I've
a
had
two to
I've
two.
Had people try to convince me like several times, and it's nothing has worked. You know,
dude, it's good to know at least two of us have refined tastes.
Oh, what's wrong with you
people? But which two? You vote with your comment.
Michael, what are we going to next?
I think I got to break out the one that everybody is expecting from me, which is Assassin's Creed 2.
I'm with you on that.
So I think this works with both definitions of most improved, because I know there are people who hate the first game. I personally loved it. I thought it was amazing. I think I gave it a 10 for GamesRadar because there was nothing else like it at the time. And then 2 came along, and it's just like, you took everything that made the first game cool and amplified it, and you took everything people didn't like about the first game and fixed it, and you gave it a much bigger story and open this new chapter in the franchise where, like, it starts to become an alternate history where, like, the first game, you're a member of the Assassin Order in the Levant fighting the Templars and with the Crusaders all over the place. And this is like, what if they hadn't been stamped out by the Mongols and instead spread their influence across Europe? And they're really the good guys against the Templars. And you get to play as a young Italian assassin, Ezio Auditore. He's super charming and super dashing, like the kind of hero you definitely want to embody. It gives you like a whole bag of tricks that are invented by Leonardo da Vinci. Yeah, it felt like Zorro plus Assassin's Creed plus I made like a little chart for the review for GamesRadar that was like plus Banjo-Kazooie because they added all these neat collectibles that were actually fun to find with the feathers.
Oh, right. And they contributed to your own personal, like, building up your own city again and helping your family.
Yeah, yeah. So you got Monte Regioni, and you got to restore it and, you know, rebuild all these businesses and services and stuff.
You know what I think, too, for maybe anyone who, like, wasn't as maybe plugged into what was going on in that era, like, gaming-wise, I think all you need to know is that 2 had its own trilogy.
Yes.
You know, like, that's kind of all you need to know as far as, like, how much of an impact Assassin's Creed 2 made.
And I think, arguably, Brotherhood might have done it one better in terms of gameplay, because it adds the Brotherhood, all the assassins.
Mm-hmm. I was going to suggest Brotherhood. Brotherhood, to me, is maybe that, they nailed it. Like, 2 was a great departure. I might make one other suggestion, and I'm not saying no to 2.
I do want to say real quick, I think 2 had the better story, and I think story is a hugely important component.
Which, remind me, were the Apple of Eden puzzles in 2?
Yes.
Because those, I still think about those.
The wheels that you had to spin around, and then you
I still think about those regularly. That is
Justice
some
Roberts
of the cool, like,
is a Templar.
Yeah, like, oh, that stuff is awesome. Like, just so like you said, Michael, the alternate history stuff, it's just gets the gears spinning in a good way.
Yeah.
I love 2. I think Assassin's Creed did this another time.
Yeah,
I would just propose to you my personal choice of like a game that perfected like a formula in AC is Odyssey.
Yeah.
I think Odyssey took everything Origins did and just made it, like, I played the shit out of Odyssey. It may be one of the games I played the longest out of any video game ever, maybe next to Elden Ring. Like, I played so much Odyssey. I don't know, man. Like, I'm not voting no for 2.
I don't disagree.
Like,
Odyssey is a
hugely fun game. Your credit, Mirage exists because they wanted to make a universe where both the Odyssey style and the AC2 style can exist in the same world. And that's why we had Mirage. Am I wrong? Like,
yeah, kind of. It's, you know, it was an attempt to, like, let's bring the series around full circle. I think they called it a remoot. Like, it's neither a reboot nor a remake, and yet it's kind of both. So, like, you know, we're going to recapture things, especially from the first game. Like, the idea of, like, you're investigating your targets and finding out things about them before you go after them. Like, that's directly from the first game.
That is great stuff.
But, yeah, I think it's also interesting because that's the second time the series did that. The first time was Revelations, when they're like, okay, now we're going to connect the Ezio trilogy with Altair's game, and we're going to bring Altair in with these memories that you can access. And
a part of me wants to vote against this to hurt Michael, but this is exactly what I was thinking of. Like, which series turned something really great into something undeniably great. And I do think Assassin's Creed 2 counts, so I'm voting.
I mean, I think they were, you know, to your point, you know, Matt, they had other highs as the series went on, but for a while there, they were chasing the high of 2. You know, like, it just, they really were. And if it's going to be between that or Odyssey in terms of the shakeup, I have to say 2, personally, because the state of, and I know Mirage took things, like, right, kind of back
Matt
to basics.
Matt could nominate Odyssey and talk about its iteration over Origins, and then we could have 2 ACs in the list, potentially.
That would be funny.
That's true.
But it wouldn't be
because of me, the Ubisoft employee.
Yeah. It gets to a scale where I just, like, me personally, I'm just a little kind of burned out just by the sheer scale when it gets to that point in the series. But 2, for me, like, it is that right amount of expansive where it is not overwhelming. And like Michael said, it is filled with really cool collectibles. You know, chasing down... Oh, no, you chase the feathers in 3, but finding the feathers in 2. The puzzle... Yeah, like, I'm telling you, man, those Apple of Eden puzzles and the... Just... That's... And
yeah, the glyphs
by the end,
were really
2,
cool.
In 2 was when we reveal, like, the secret ending, because you get those all and it reveals the secret ending with, like, the whatever you call the...
Minerva
Eden people.
Is talking.
Yeah,
about,
Minerva,
yeah,
thank you.
First civilization, the Isu, as they were named in later games.
Right. Yeah. Yep. And that is, yeah. That, so for me, if we're choosing an AC, I have to say 2.
So you'd say 2 over Odyssey as well, Michael?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's more emblematic, I feel like, of what we're talking about.
That's fair.
Just because Origin and Odyssey, and I didn't play them as much as you, Matt, but they're a little indistinguishable, but this is back when I was super hungry for AC and there was only one or two, so I am biased in that regard.
Well, I think Odyssey is also emblematic of something that, like, I've heard it, I think somebody writing about Grand Theft Auto way, way back in the day with San Andreas, and it's like, it's a game that is always saying yes to the player. Like, it's, can I do this? Yes! Can I go here? Yes!
Am I allowed to nominate that game?
Can I jump off a huge statue and not die?
And not take any damage? Yeah, why not? Yep. What's our order?
I think I'm next.
Tony?
No, Matt is next.
No, I think Tony. Next. It's Tony. I was last.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to go with another one where I think they've been chasing the high ever since, much like 2. And that would be Silent Hill 2.
Ooh.
I'm bringing out a heavy hitter. Banjo-Tooie's not a heavy hitter, it's just a winner for me. I'm bringing out my heavy hitter here, and that's Silent Hill 2. Silent Hill 2 is, I think that is, I know the point of this list is to define, right, and to refine what a series means, but I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a purer example than Silent Hill 2. It is just a distillation of the psychological, metaphorical horror, right? Like, I don't want to just, like, plug my own stuff all the time here, but I've done a video diving into, like, everything in that game reinforces its themes of grief, of regret, of shame, of anger, of physical and, like, sexual deviancy. Like, all these things.
Dog endings.
Yes. Yeah.
I just want to interrupt and say, if you want to watch me plug my own stuff, I have an OnlyFans.
Hey.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm so proud of you. That joke.
Like every single piece there just reinforces it. And I kind of struggle to even remember what one is like about. I think it's someone a baby dies or someone
no,
a father
no, no.
dies.
A father is traveling with his adopted daughter. They get into a crash in the middle of the night, and she runs off into this foggy town, and so he has to go after her.
Right, thank you. And then it's a whole crazy cult, whatever.
Yeah.
But 2, and we're far enough removed that I think we can just talk about the details, right? Like the entire thing is this metaphor and this reveal of like, oh, you killed your own wife. And all of this is the struggle around that. And in some ways, like his attempted justification of why. Right. And I just think it is just brilliantly executed from enemy designs representing this past trauma, from literally the structure and like layout of the game representing these things.
1001 locked doors.
Yeah. That's the one weird thing is like, why are you making me go through an apartment building when I only need to open 2 of these doors? Like, not perfect, right? But as far as nailing what Silent Hill should be, I think they've been chasing it ever since.
Silent Hill has been chasing ever since. It has failed to iterate in that significant a way.
Yeah, like people say good things about 3, people say good things about 4, but then after that, it's just like, man, this ain't it. And like, this year, The Short Message, it was all right. That was okay. And that was the first time people finally thought like, oh yeah, this is just a little bit of what I remember that being. But like 2 is, there's a reason that's the one they're remaking, right? Because that is Silent Hill.
Oh, when so you spoiled an unreleased game. Unbelievable.
But unbelievable. I mean, like
when people picture Silent Hill in their brains, they are picturing 2,
Like the improvement from 1 to 2, I think if you've ever played 1, like 1 is
almost bizarre.
It is kind of bizarre. It's like a stranger version of like a Resident Evil game.
Yeah,
there's like a lot more frequent combat, I remember, and it's with like a really annoying enemies like skinless dogs and these little baby creatures.
It's like a PSP
with knives
version of Silent Hill.
And then. Like, it was much more about, like, fighting this cult and these monsters that they've summoned. And then 2 kind of gave that all a meaning and it just added, like, took what was just, like, a foggy town that was hard to get around and kind of creepy and made it melancholy and feel personal. And,
Silent Hill 2 is the game that says Silent Hill is your personal hell for whatever it is you're dealing with. That started with Silent Hill 2. Yeah.
And other people who are there that you encounter, they're all experiencing their own private hells that are different from your private hell.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like a bed daddy or whatever that thing was called, which is so upsetting.
I have never personally played all of Silent Hill 2. I sat there stoned and watched my friend play it.
That's also good.
In its that entirety,
sounds
multiple times.
Terrifying.
It was awful. It was awful and wonderful.
That sounds so scary.
But every research I did on this subject in any Google definition led me to Silent Hill 2. It is pretty undeniable that that's what people think is like, oh. And this is what an improved sequel looks like is Silent Hill 2.
I think there's a genuine case to be made for it honestly being like the best horror game ever made. Like, it is in that discussion.
Well, I think you could even make the case that like the series wouldn't exist if 2 was good enough because it has squandered all of that, all of that fandom.
And yet,
numerous
still
times.
Fondly remembered, like it is still. You say that name, and it still makes people go, "Oh yeah."
Like, well, it also kind of demonstrated that like horror games could do more. Like, horror games up to that point kind of meant like jump scares, like you're going to be walking down a dark hallway and shit's going to jump through a window. Silent Hill 2 was about always having the terror of that happening, about feeling like it was imminent, and then that never, well, it rarely comes through. So it's like horror edging.
Right.
Like, it's always building this sense of dread, but there aren't that many payoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but like, you know, you get the radio squeal when something's nearby. You get all these. Yeah, it's. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you can really map the course of AAA horror with Silent Hill and Resident Evil. Because Resident Evil, to its detriment, thought, we're a shooter. That's what we are. And it was distasteful for a lot of fans because what they wanted was more of the ambiance and mood of Silent, something like Silent Hill 2.
And I do think it's interesting that this, like, at least in my kind of perspective, the series have remained distinct, right? Like, it's easy to look at them at the beginning and see them as such close competitors, but as both series went on, like,
they
have remained so different from one another. And I think that's just fascinating on its own right, you know?
I gotta vote for it, just because, like, I couldn't find any conversation where it wasn't brought up and championed in every regard, in every corner of the internet.
It is one of the most thoroughly, like, thought about games in terms of design. Like, they truly, in the way that, I have to say it, I will bring up Dark Souls, and the way that From Software is thinking about every detail, every single beat of the story, what every individual encounter means, what the architecture means. That is what Silent Hill 2 is doing. Every detail has a purpose.
Are you voting for Silent
Hill
2?
Of course I'm voting for Silent Hill 2.
And we got Silent Hill 2.
Yes, this was your opportunity to hurt me and you squandered it.
Having never played it, all I can do is vote present. So. Oh,
all right. That's fine, but highly recommend. I mean, you can get through it in maybe not a weekend.
Just a heads up, we are now at 5 entries in our finalists list. So.
We're going to have to make cuts.
We're going to have to make cuts, and we're all on our last round.
We're crowning Banjo-Tooie and moving on to
news. I thought we'd have more overlap.
I have 2 more. So I'm on my... This is just my second
choice.
I think
we have more overlap, too, but maybe we're all like dancing around not wanting the overlap, you know?
Well,
I'm debating how I fuck up this list.
Matt, which one is your favorite? And then briefly say which one you didn't want to put in.
Well, I want to put in both of these. These are my last 2 entries. I'm looking at the time we've been recording, so I'm going to throw 2 of them out there. I'll just throw one of mine. We'll keep going in order.
Which is the one you're not throwing in there?
This is the one that I feel like is a shoe-in that has to be on the final list. Mass Effect 2. Come on, motherfuckers.
That is in my list as well.
It's not on my personal one because I was like, someone else will cover this, but I'm fully behind it.
It took everything that first game had so much potential, and it perfected it. It got rid of all the clunky bits, and I didn't think the car stuff was that bad, but I get it. Well, people didn't like it.
Well, it didn't become a game about exploring space after a while. Like, it's... But it's also like, did you notice the Starfield criticisms? What that entailed?
And perfected giant space opera RPG. The combat was way improved. The new characters they introduced into were amazing. Like, this... This is on a million lists. I feel like I don't need to defend why Mass Effect 2 belongs.
It's on mine.
It's
our first overlap.
It's also the peak of that series because most people prefer it over 3.
Right, that's another one of my things is I feel like when people are picturing Mass Effect, it's 2. Like, you're thinking about the suicide mission most of the time, right? And just the interweavings of that and like just how much thought was put into it. Who do you take How much time have you spent with them? Who do you choose in the moment to do the tasks? It all matters, and it is an incredible climax to an RPG. Yep.
And that even, impact of, like, all of your decisions in Mass Effect 1 are going to carry over. And I remember them saying that, and like, we'll see. And you don't really feel the impact of that first game until you get the second game.
Mm-hmm.
And the arguments against this that I was just reading, and they're not mine, because I don't love Mass Effect 1, is that Mass Effect 1 was way more RPG. Like, a lot... RPG-y. Like, a lot of choices.
It is very... Yeah, 2 is action RPG. 1 is... kind of just RPG in a lot of ways.
It was the action RPG elements that I felt like mixed so well with the character interactions, and you can finally fuck who you want to fuck.
They make the shooting in the biotics feel really good.
Yep.
Actually, speaking of what you just said, Chris, I guess we've mentioned T'Dar again earlier in this. One of the moments that like got me sort of listening back in the day and like, you know, eventually led to me sitting here right now podcasting with y'all, is 2 introduces Jack. And there are 2 potential sex scenes with Jack. One is like the actual romantic like finish to her story. The other is just you can just kind of fling whatever. But I remember Brett on T'Dar saying like, so you can have 2 types of sex with Jack. And Chris, you just go anal. And and I laughed so hard.
Why was that my first one? I'm a horrible partner.
You might have said but and no. But it just
the man knows what he likes. The man knows what he likes.
And I mean that was like,
did I say it too loud? Sorry, everyone.
And that might have been whatever it was, early high school, whatever for me. So like, oh man, you hit my sophomore sensibility right there with that joke.
I know, it's just I could become a semi-famous podcaster just by screaming anal into a microphone because Retronauts wasn't doing it.
Yeah, no one else was doing it at the time. It was revolutionary.
Oh, man. I don't think Jack is necessarily one of the most memorable of that cast, but, like, so many of that party are just such great characters, right? Like, I mean, Ta Lee specifically, that's a standout for me.
Yeah.
I just think that's one of the coolest RPG concepts. Mm-hmm. Like, as far as a character, like, that is just so well done. 2 is Legion 2 or 3? I'm forgetting.
I think he's 2.
He's
3. Sorry, I think he's 3.
Yeah, but either way, like, 2 just has an incredible, incredible list of characters that you're just like, they're people I still think about.
Morden,
and
baby.
And you could say...
Morden.
Garrus, right? Like, all these people that you think about and you still care about.
Oh,
right.
Man, just the reintroduction of Garrus was so emotional and amazing. Oh, so
he's like bounty hunting or something, right?
Archangel or something like
he's
that.
He's Archangel.
Yeah, he snipes you, right? He's sniping at you.
I can't deny that, like, Mass Effect 3, what, they're adding multiplayer? That's dumb. Don't like multiplayer, Mass Effect,
dude,
no.
The multiplayer in 3 is awesome.
Because of the multiplayer, I spent double the amount of time I would have spent in a single playthrough of Mass Effect 3.
It was a victim of that era when, like, every game had to have multiplayer shoehorned
in. It was, but, like, it fundamentally changed the weapons. Because the weapons were all energy weapons with... Weren't they mostly, like, cooldown time-based? And then it became like, fuck it, just reload.
Yeah. And it, like, fed into the whole, like, global war, like, planet, like... planet percentage things,
but the cover shooting and the moving over obstacles, that's all from 2. And I can totally see if that's not what you wanted out of a Mass Effect game, but you know that argument has sort of been settled by BioWare, and it's what I enjoyed more.
No. Who are we kidding? Let's get down to it. In the week that we're going to talk about Stellar Blade more.
Miranda's ass.
Oh, thank you, Chris.
Thank you. Oh my God, we both fell over ourselves.
Should we have done most important asses this week?
I think we did. I think we need Anne for that.
Yeah, but, that's true. We did butts for I think episode 69.
Yeah,
for her birthday.
Hey now.
Birthday. I'll never forget that social media sharing that shot of Miranda's ass and. Who was it? Was it Soulja Boy just like biting his lip, like looking right at it? And like, it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. You can put 2 photos together? God, the internet is cool.
What's that meme with the dude in the yellow suit, putting his hand, rubbing his hands together?
Yeah, like, behind the tree.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think this is obviously getting in.
Yeah, it's an all around. All right, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, does that take it to five or is that six?
No, that's well, we're at six now.
Okay.
That's
so do we want to do like a lightning round where we just because we each prepared three. We've gone through eight. Yeah.
I will just say them,
vote, and move on.
Lightning round,
and then we got to make one cut.
The two I have in here that I didn't want to. Mass Effect 2 was one of them.
Okay.
And there are two that, like, I almost don't want to bring up because I think Mega Man 2 is too hard. Mega Man 2 is an arguably.
You think?
I think so. Because I'll skip it in case it's yours.
No, it's not.
But, it's just what you know about the Mega Man series, like, all the overlay, the story, and the music, it all comes from 2. 1 is so bare bones and weird when you go back and play it, whereas if you know Mega Man 2, none of the other games will seem as weird, but a game without a chargeable bust and a slide, to me, is no longer Mega Man. That's also that happens after 2. GTA San Andreas was another one, like, with our qualifications, I think does count, because, like, GTA games were 10 out of 10 for me, and I still spent quadruple the amount of time in GTA San Andreas that I did of those two. And most players have been wondering, asking Rockstar, why don't you make these games more like San Andreas? Where's my jetpack?
San Andreas was a weird outlier, though, because it had so many systems that they never repeated. I would almost argue refined.
But I would almost argue Vice City
is more the perfection game.
In the space of, what, five games, they went from a 2D beat 'em up where you could steal cars and you had a fart button to an open world RPG set in like a recreation of California and Nevada.
You could fly a plane over a casino you owned, jump out with your jetpack, and kill everyone with a flamethrower.
Yes.
It is bizarre, but I think, like, that's for players. San Andreas is a dragon that players have been chasing and Rockstar kind of hasn't. And I'm saying that is with very little knowledge of GTA Online, but my real nomination was going to be Halo 3. And I wonder if that's too personal, because one, I didn't play Halo 2 until it came out. I kind of played it in I had a lot of college stuff, a lot of finals, working full-time, going to college full-time, and when Halo 3 was coming out, I feel like Halo 3 is the first real promise of what Microsoft said Xbox Live was supposed to be. Granted, no other game followed that. They didn't add a theater. They didn't have free DLC. They didn't have Forge, a map creator that you could share with people. Like, that shit was insane. In addition, I think Halo 3's single player is the best of any Halo game, period. Yeah. I can't quantify that very well because I'm not smart enough to tell you what makes that game better, because I feel like the next four and a half games are just them doing that again. But it felt bigger than Halo 1 and 2 for sure, because and I didn't love the Arbiter missions.
I think the multiplayer alone and what you could do in that with the fucking pirate ships and the zombie thing and like all those variations that people could just invent, like that by itself would qualify. The campaign was also really, really good. I think this gets a vote from me.
The skulls, like all that shit, like it was, but it's like something. It was a trend, like San Andreas. It was a trend so robust, most second party developers never bothered to rip it off because it's too hard.
I would also give it my vote just in brief of the Halo. I've not played every Halo game, but I played up through 4, and I don't remember where ODST falls in line, but I've also played ODST. And of all those, 3 is far and away my favorite of those.
3 is an insane like orange box package. Like it was the most you ever got for $60, I think, in gaming history.
Yeah, it's hard to argue against. Personally, I just felt like 2 was so good. 3 felt very incrementally better to me, but I also don't engage that much in the multiplayer of those games. But I'm not going to vote against Halo 3. In many ways, the series has been chasing the success of Halo 3 ever since.
Yeah, you know,
they finished the fight, and they didn't have much fight left in them.
I kept seeing things.
To invent new fights.
This is from Reddit. Halo 3 is the only one without a collector's edition, because it's on Master Chief Collection. It doesn't really need to be remastered for you to see how awesome it is, whereas 1 and 2 do.
Let's keep going. Might go on and do a little quick.
Let's show you. I'll show you how to do a lightning round. Zelda, Link to the Past, yay or nay?
That's a yay for me.
Yeah, that's a yay.
It would be a yay, but it is a yay for me personally, but it's like Link Between Worlds. I could never call it a better version of Link to the Past. But
Link to the Past perfected the formula they did in 1, and then they modeled so many of the Zelda games on that formula afterwards.
But then abandoned everything 3 was. Or Zelda was. Link to the Past was. Ugh.
So where are the votes? Is that just a yay for me and Michael then? So it's not going through?
No,
I'm a yay on it. I'm a yay.
All right. Okay. We're going to have to whittle down either way.
I know. So, all right. Go ahead, Tony.
So so the two that I will not put forward, but just so they get mentioned, Pokemon Gold and Silver. And
glad you're here.
Gonna have
and,
to leave
well, if, well, here's another one for you. Sly Cooper 2.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the one everyone hates.
It's the best one. They're all wrong. but the one I will actually throw out there.
Did TL mail you his entries?
It is funny how TL and I are like buds and have none of the same taste. okay, but the
except
one I'm actually
going to put, oddly enough.
Yeah, the one I'm actually going to put forward, Resident Evil 2.
Mm. Nah. Yeah.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah,
does the two scenarios thing better? You even get A, B scenarios. Mm-hmm. It does the whole like puzzling through the doors thing better. Like the chess piece keys in 1 are fine. Yeah, they're chess pieces, right? I think.
I don't remember.
They're shields with different emblems.
Let me
whatever
give you this Sophie's choice.
2 does better with the heart with the card suits. You know, like it's
Tony. You're a mother on the edge of a cliff, and both of your arms are attached to 2 children. One is Silent
Sophie's choicing, okay.
One is Silent Hill 2 and one is Resident Evil 2. Which one do you pick?
I'll give you the answer. I will give you the answer straight. If I'm saving a franchise,
I bet you don't.
I'm saving Resident Evil. And the choice you have given me, if it is just those 2 games, I save Silent Hill 2.
Hmm.
Ooh. But yeah, I mean, the reason I'm not going to vote for this is I don't see it making the final list. When I look at our current finalists, like, I don't think it's going to
happen. These are our stragglers.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. And, like, in your... Yeah, so to directly answer that, Chris, yeah, like, if I just got to drop 1, I do think Silent Hill 2 is a better game to Resident Evil 2, but, like, you can't compare the franchises really at all at this point.
That's true.
But if I got to save 1, I will save Silent Hill 2.
This was not my straggler, although I don't think it's going through because I don't think you guys have played it enough to love it. So I think The Witcher 3 is the definition.
Oh, ooh,
oh no, fuck. You're correct. It's
I played enough of 2 and 3, never 1, but to know you're correct.
They were trying something with 1. They started to really get there with 2, and 3 is like, okay, you nailed it. That's what you've been going for this entire time, and they won over a ton of people.
I can't explain it properly, but I haven't spent more time in Witcher 3 because I missed it at launch and I had downloaded on the sale in between a bunch of other fun stuff coming out, and like, this is too good and too big, and I don't have to talk about this on a podcast. I gotta get away from this.
I did every single quest across the entire base game and both DLCs. Actually, you might be able to look up full walkthroughs of all that on GamesRadar still somewhere. At least for Blood and Wine. But no, that's like Witcher 3 is still used as a baseline to talk about games today. Mm-hmm. Like, when you talk about, like, oh, what's the world feel like? What's the combat feel like? Right? Like, one of the flavors people will just use is, oh, this feels like Witcher 3 combat. This feels like a Witcher 3 world.
Especially with side quests. When people talk about good side quests in a game, it to is Witcher 3.
Absolutely.
Anyway, all right. So it's safe to say that makes the finalist list then, right?
It's like you guys a big yes for me.
It's a big finalist list. We're going to have to be brutal.
Apparently all our overlap, some of it
let's
came
do
at
this.
End,
we're going to go through each entry in the finalist list, and we'll do a live vote.
Read the full list first.
Okay, here you go. Full list. Mario 3. Hmm. Mortal Kombat 2. Or as I like to call it, the first game that will not make the cut. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3.
The second game that won't make the cut.
Oh, come on. Assassin's Creed 2. Silent Hill 2. Mass Effect 2. Halo 3. Zelda Link to the Past. And The Witcher 3.
So we got to cut 4 games. All right. I know what 2 I'm cutting right
do
away.
Do I have
personally
the authority to take Mario 3 out of contention here?
Why would you?
I'm not going to vote for it.
It was because I think it's important, but like, I really think if you want to know what games are, every single thing we mention here, I don't know, are more important additions and improvements. in terms of franchises here.
Well, let's, I personally think you fucked it up. I would have gone World. World would have made my list, but not.
Oh,
three.
Stop it. I took it out of contention. You can't hurt me now.
Mortal Kombat 2, I think, is an easy cut.
I have to agree. Sorry, Michael.
I'm glad we talked about
it. I gotta agree.
But,
kill it with fire. All right.
Let's just get Banjo-Tooie back in there now.
Any other easy cuts for anyone on this list?
Just as I go through it, it is a great game in its own right, but Tony Hawk is one for me where I'm like, I can lose that one.
Can it hang with the rest of these? I don't know.
That's the thing. It's tough. It can hang for what it is. I can't hang in this crowd.
It's tough. All right, I'll kill it. I mean, it gets us down there. Here's one to me that is standing out as just odd on the list is Zelda. Like, when I think of these other
that's
games,
because
are so...
I wanted to get through it quickly and didn't make an argument.
Okay. Well,
here's the thing. I'm with Michael on this, but I think he and I are the only ones who are like passionate about it being.
No,
on
you're they're not. You're
the
not.
Reason
okay.
it's the reason okay. it
because,
stands
because guess
out to
what
me.
Guess what Zelda's I can go back and play anytime. It's not Ocarina, and it's definitely not Majora's Mask, and it's not it's definitely not Skyward Sword. It is always Linked to the Past.
But the reason it's sticking out to me is there wasn't a clean through line. Like, Zelda 1 and 2 are completely different games, and then 3 goes back to 1.
Yeah,
you know?
3 goes back to 1, and it improves on 1. It fleshes it out considerably. You lose some of the openness, but at the same time, you gain like a lot of story and variation and some like unforgettable bosses.
It's kind of the basis of every one that came after it. Yeah. Like,
okay, I mean, you guys are fighting for that
one. Up until Wind Waker, everything in between Link to the Past up to Wind Waker is a riff on Link to the Past for that series.
It's not
your Link's Awakening, the Oracle games, Ocarina itself, Majora, they're all riff on Link to the Past.
That's a tough one.
Okay.
Maybe we come back to that
we
one.
Gotta,
we got to
kill two. We got to kill two of these things, man.
The other one I would propose, but again,
it's because I haven't played it, is Silent Hill 2. Silent Hill 2, to me, on this list, that stands out as like, there's no way that can hang with.
Oh, it's got to. I think it's the easiest one, like, to guarantee to be on the list. Like, I think it stands above
them
all.
Yeah, I'm not.
I think it's in a league of its own.
With no personal baggage behind Silent Hill 2, I think the world, the gaming world, wants it on there. And maybe. Mm. Let's readdress Halo 3 because part of that was the promise of Xbox Live, which it's hard to imagine now. Like, yeah, I'll give you $15 a month. You know how much we struggle now to give something $15 a month? We have jobs.
I'm okay losing Halo 3 because every Halo was praised up until then. It's not like people were like, oh man, this is a 7. If only they would fix this. Like, Halo 1 was regarded as people's this amazing
thing. I stand by it's
the
best package ever available in gaming, every other Halo has kind of offered the same or more, and once they've been remastered, it won't stand out that much, whereas I think Silent Hill 2 will.
We got one more cut.
I'm willing to cut 3, if we're cutting 3, so... Halo 3.
Cutting Mario 3 is what you're saying?
Halo 3.
Halo 3, okay. Halo 3 I removed. Do we want to go back? So, Chris, you nominated removing Mario 3. I agree with you. So, two of us now are saying get rid of Mario 3.
If we get rid of Mario...
This is the only one that is motivated by me wanting to get through this segment. But
okay. Let me ask. If Mario 3 is cut, what's the list? What are the five winners?
So, it's Assassin's Creed 2, Silent Hill 2, Mass Effect 2, Zelda A Link to the Past, and The Witcher 3.
I think that's a really
I'm
great
okay
list.
I'm okay with that.
I think that's a really good list.
I think the Mario fans will understand.
All right.
Yeah.
Because I think, like Matt said, if it were World, maybe a different conversation for most
Let
folks.
It be known that the Sonic guy just removed Mario from this list.
and
that's, Matt, that's way past cool.
I want to put this on record. I think Witcher 3 was such a enormous feat.
Mm.
CD Projekt Red will never be able to meet it. It'll be a quarter of the game.
No.
With modern standards,
it'd be too expensive to make that game now.
Yeah, Witcher 4 is they have an impossible task of making Witcher 4. I feel bad.
Allegedly, there's a team working on Witcher 3. I thought they even said that Witcher 3 remastered.
One and two, but it's a remaster of one, but to be done in the style of three. Yeah. Mm.
Let's start ordering these bad boys.
We got to do that too. How about alphabetical?
Yeah,
let's put Assassin's Creed 2 on top.
I think the I would maybe swap AC2 and Silent Hill 2, but I think the list that we have right now, the order on in the notes is pretty good. It's
from
right,
like a 5-4-3-2-1?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right now it goes Assassin's Creed 2, Silent Hill 2, Mass Effect 2, Zelda Link to the Past, and Witcher 3.
Yeah, I would agree with you though, Michael. I would swap Silent Hill and Assassin's Creed.
I won't fight it. I would put Silent Hill 2 at number one, but that's okay. I'm still happy it's on there.
You are so pleased with yourself, Tony, right now.
You don't understand the love I have for that game.
You got all of my nominated games kicked off the list to get yours to number one. You're the new Matt for me.
That's true. There's no Chris games on this list.
I honestly thought we'd have a lot more overlap, but I feel like
Chris nominated Mass Effect 2 as well. Remember, that was on his list.
I did. It was on my top three.
But I also specifically brought, like, not specifically, but I also brought several games I knew weren't making it. I just wanted to make sure they got mentioned.
And then I was bummed to see a bunch of twos on here, but that is part of turning a classic into perfection. Right. Like, you can only do that once.
Yeah.
Well, I asked Michael specifically when we were, you know, before the episode, like, hey, so, like, does this mean they all have to be second entries? Like, you know what I mean?
It could be. Yeah,
the latest game in a franchise is usually going to be the most playable, but, like, the most important and replayable, like, it's a lot of times going to be the two. And Zelda 3, Link to the Past, is kind of the two.
That's the thing. Like, video games are unique in that, like, I don't think sequels are, like, there's always an expectation with video games that is usually met that sequels are going to be better than the games that preceded them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that with books. You don't see that with movies.
No.
But with video games, I think, and part of the reason I think it's usually the number two that is the best in the franchise is that you've got the number one game where, like, the dev team is, you know, getting used to working together. They're just sort of proving themselves. They have this idea. They have to make a bunch of cuts. They put it out. If it's a hit, then they get the freedom to do all the other stuff they wanted to do.
By the time you're pre-ordering it, they're working on fixing all the things in their first game. And then to become that first game's realization, by the time the third game needs to be developed, like, anybody got any ideas?
Yeah, now what do we do? We ran through all of our ideas in number two.
I make one suggestion to the order? Can we bump Mass Effect up to at least number two, so maybe above Zelda? So
sure.
It's so important. It's so
sure. I'm not even thinking of them as being ranked, so I'm
But Matt, look at me. You owe me.
you want to read down the list, the final list, one time.
And Michael
has
a sound
effect. I have a closing statement after that.
Final sound effects.
Number five,
Eddie, you can't just kill someone because of the way they looked at you.
Oh yeah, why not? Till now, I always let people walk all over me,
just like that stupid dog.
Silent Hill 2.
Wow.
Yeah. Who knew? Moving on.
Number four.
The Auditorio are not dead. I'm still here. Me, Ezio. Ezio Auditore.
Assassin's Creed 2.
Number three.
Zelda, A Link to the Past. I didn't even have to argue for that one, really. I just want that known for the record. And
number two.
We should play poker sometime. Anyway, it's good to have you back. Now, believe it or not, this damn gun still needs calibrating.
Mass Effect 2, because so why not? It is important, you're right. But not as important as our...
Why'd you join the army? Someone recruit you?
Good? No good. Come good soldier mans. Say charger man wants boats. Peasanters, they steers. Peasanters boats. That's literal. Dunno.
The Witcher 3. Hooray!
Awesome.
Let it be known that once again, your old pal Matty Al mind fucked these
manipulated
guys
you into putting number five to number one.
I snuck in Witcher 3 and no one said anything.
I said
about
because it was something that, like, we were all like, shit, I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah. And unlike Mortal Kombat 2, which I front loaded, we didn't have time to second guess.
It's recency bias, is what you're saying. Recency bias.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, Michael, can you hit me with the reverse number one and then I'll give my closing statement?
Sure.
Numero cero.
Uh-huh? The Hulk?
That's Grunty.
Oh, man. Banjo and then Tootie is in here in the studio with us.
And then Tootie is oh. I got all of them. I got the whole thing.
Nicely done.
All right. Well, that's been our top five. Hope you had fun as we stumbled through it together.
Nailed it.
On that one, we're going to take a little break because we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. This is like the first big new release week in a while. We've got Sandland. We've got Stellar Blade. We've got Euden Chronicle 100 Heroes. We've got news, a bunch of other stuff. So stay tuned.
Toss a coin to your witcher, O Valley of Plenty, O Valley of Plenty, oh. Toss a coin to your witcher, O Valley of Plenty.
Let's get scratching.
Would you like exclusive bonus podcast commentaries and more from the LaserTime crew? Then we strongly encourage you to support this show on patreon.com/lasertime. It supports not only this show, but all the rest of the LaserTime Network. You'll get commentaries, play games with the hosts, see exclusive videos first, and receive an uncut weekly ad-free podcast bonus time. Speaking of which, here's a quick taste.
We are going to be talking about the film from 1984 that I've watched the most number of times.
Oh.
No other film in 1984 have I watched and rewatched as many times as this film.
Not even Paris, Texas?
Not even Barton Fink?
Nope.
I think I'm sort of with you on this because it's just one of my earliest memories. And I think given our ages, 1984, I'm not asking to watch any movie. I don't know any movies exist, really. I have to be brought to one or it has to be shown to me. And I think I have really specific memories of this was just brought to school.
Yeah.
I would have been 4 when the movie came out, so I think there's no way I'm in the theater because it's Neverending Story is not a huge hit.
Yeah, listeners, we are talking about the 1984 film The Neverending Story.
Get Bonus Time, a weekly uncensored and commercial-free podcast every Tuesday starting for just $5 on patreon.com/lasertime.
And welcome back to our second segment where we're just going to dive headlong into Stellar Blade is out this week. It comes out on Friday, so none of us have played it. I played the demo some.
The demo is
out there if you're curious because, you know, even in recent weeks I heard people saying, like, there's no gameplay. Like, there's a game you can play. But it reminded me really strongly of Nier Automata. Like, it's structured similarly. Mm-hmm. It has similar sword play. And I think, there was Yoko Taro interviewed the creator of Stellar Blade the director in IGN Japan.
And what kind of mask did the Stellar Blade creator wear interview?
But there was something in there like saying, like, I'm jealous, like Yoko Taro saying, I'm jealous of this. I could never create something like this. And saying he thought it was superior to Nier Automata, which is a hell of a compliment.
Quite a statement. Right, wow.
Nier Automata was this, in our neck of the woods, was a massive sensation, and we've heard no announcement of anything new. Mm-hmm. And there is the only thing that struck me is just like this conversation we've had on and off mic that, like, people aren't buying AAA games anymore. And I was playing it and, like, yeah, this does feel like defiantly old school. And perhaps from another country and I was like, oh, it's Korean. That's Korean. Because it has Japan sensibilities, but no one's making games like this anymore. And it's because it's gorgeous.
It felt very DMC to me.
Yeah, me too.
Like that's not necessarily the action thing I play a lot of. So, you know, I'll say that after playing the demo, I was like, I don't think this is for me. But good looking game, really good looking, like yes. And I'm not even
it's a good looking game with funky on foot shit.
I gotta go out on a limb and take an alienating stance here. Hot take, are you ready? And a lot of people have been saying this online. Those huge bangs are not flattering to her tiny face. That is a terrible look. Video games should not promote those fucking bangs. That shit belongs in the 2010s on Zooey Deschanel's head.
Yeah, go work at the Gap. I'm with Tony in that, like, this seems cool. $70 cool.
That's where I am. That's where I am. But clearly, it's resonating with people. It's reviewing well. So,
for,
like,
the wrong reasons, but sure.
Well, it's okay. There is that whole crowd, which I don't even want to talk about, because, like,
it's unfortunate that this became the poster game for this culture war that's raging on stupid Twitter now.
So it's a good game. It's a good game.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It is reviewing well. People are like, this is a good action game. And it's unfortunate that, a terrible, crowd of people who would serve us better falling down an elevator shaft are all, championing it. It's like, the game has boobs again. It's like, dude, games have never been hornier.
Finally, like, putting ass back into games. Like, okay. Like,
games have literally never been hornier, and they just keep getting more so. Like, what are you paying attention to that you think this is some watershed thing? You know?
Well, I think it's been a while since there's been a big action-focused Japanese release outside of Final Fantasy Rebirth, which even they toned some of that stuff down.
Well, if we're talking like this kind of style, I would argue the Bayonetta 3, which is not that long ago.
Yeah, but it's... Man, that game looks fucking horrible. I love it so much.
Sure. Yeah, that's the one thing.
This looks so good.
That is the thing that I will... Even if the game itself is not for me, I will look at it and say, that is beautifully animated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it looks incredible.
I mean, as much as I join in that chorus of, I'm still going to get it so I can talk about it more authoritatively next week.
Yeah. Their review embargoes, I think they lifted today or something. Yeah. They're all hidden.
It's getting the low 80s. It's getting good reviews. I think IGN gave it a 7, which they tweeted that out saying 7 is good. Mm-hmm. Like, that's literally the description.
7 out of 10 is a good score.
Guess I'm sorry. Nobody agrees with that.
Yes, but I will not be on the podcast next week since I'm merely a guest, so I don't have to buy the game to talk about it.
Good for you. You have, however, played Sandland, which is week's other major release.
Yes, and I did not play the demo myself because I like anticipated that I would be covering it, so I didn't like feel a need to.
The demo is weird.
I heard it was not necessarily like bad in terms of gameplay, but like bad in terms of serving as a demo.
The vertical slice they chose.
Well, it's just like, here are the three vehicles that you can use and two of the companions you can recruit, and here's we'll give you a little bit of desert to roam around in, and you can beat up monsters, and that's it. There's no quests, there's no story, there's no indication of like what you'll be doing most of the time
other than
fighting monsters.
Bizarre.
But maybe they were assuming the real game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they were assuming prior knowledge there. I'll speed through the history part. So Sandland, it's a manga by Akira Toriyama. He released it in 2000.
R.I.P.
And that's the other thing. Like, when that happened, I was like, well, I'm going to play this game out of respect now.
The best, the best publicity this game could have ever had. Cause even I'm looking at it, which I wouldn't have otherwise. But remember, like, Matt can even... Like, putting out a demo is not an easy feat, and most companies don't like fucking doing it.
So the thing that I think is getting... obviously, the man was a tower of that field. Like,
burst.
Akira Toriyama, his influence on... Not manga, but, like, the world cannot be overstated. Mm-hmm. Like, genuinely, an incredibly influential person. However, the kind of the push behind this game is that it is based on the anime, which released this year. And that is, I think, maybe a thing that's gone under some folks' radars. So the original manga, it's short. It's like an Odyssey to the West type story. It's just 14 chapters, really like fun, tight story, big fan. And then, the anime came out, which is about the same amount of episodes, but they get through the manga in about half. And then the back half is a totally new story that Akira Toriyama helped develop. So this game is then a kind of just a straight up, it adheres very closely to the original story, and it plays. This is going to sound not flattering, but it is very similar to that Mad Max game that came out like 10 years ago.
I love that Mad Max game. So
I feel like I remember being treated kind of middle of the road. But it's very, so, you know, vehicle based combat is the bread and butter of this thing. it feels really good. There's like one or two maybe duds out of like the multiple vehicles you get, but driving around in that tank and like blasting their enemies, it feels so good. There's a motorbike that feels awesome to zip through the desert with. So in terms of like adapting the original property, I think it does a great job. I don't know if there's an American dub of the anime. If there isn't, then the voice cast of this game needs to do it, because the voice acting is genuinely great. Obviously, like Toriyama's art style is impeccable, right? Mm-hmm. It works so well. The cell shading, it's a great looking game, and it is not as overwhelming as an open world thing as some experiences can be. It's kind of like I would see in like the Spider-Man like 30-hour category as opposed to like 60, you know, whatever. And then for me, the one criticism is I don't think the open world is necessarily like as great as it could be. There are some activities to do, there are things to go and see, but like overall for me, like the open worldness of it is like a B-. Like, could be better. There could have been some more things to throw in there. But for what it is, like if you are a fan of Sandland, if you read that, you know, 24 years ago now, whatever it was, right? If you are a fan, this is such a pure adaptation of that story. That, like, for that crowd, it's worth it. It's not a mishandling of the thing you love. It is, like, the exact video game adaptation that you're going to want. Outside of that appeal, like, yeah, I don't know who's going to necessarily go grab it.
If it wasn't for him dying, I never would have heard of Sandland.
Right, so that's the thing, is it's meant to tie into that, like, anime, mm-hmm. really, and so if you're not already in that crowd that was excited for such a thing, then why would you even, why would you even be aware this is happening, sort of, you know what I mean?
And I think we mentioned that, like, Toriyama has just become such a massive part of Namco's refined business over the last couple of years. They're practically one-third a DC or a Dragon Ball company / Toriyama company.
Yeah.
So I can see them wanting to make this step. I'm like, we can adapt Toriyama stuff pretty decently.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
why not try it?
Where, like, and I mean, you know, the Sandland manga, like, that is like strictly cult classic level as far as its popularity, at least these days. Like, that is how I would classify it. It's great, but like, you're hard pressed to find some other folks who've actually read it. So to adapt that into a video game, yeah, you're already starting from kind of a disadvantage. So in that respect, yeah, I think you're right, Chris. Like, it's meant to tie into other things, but Toriyama's death is giving it a much bigger push.
I feel like it's going
to
get lost. But it's something that appeals to me.
It is. It's going to. And that's why I say, like, for people who enjoy the Sandland IP, if you will, it's a must play. Mm. Outside of that, I couldn't tell you why, unless you just really love vehicle combat. Maybe you're itching for, like, the Star Fox land tank.
Vigilante 8!
You know?
I'm in.
Yeah, but I'm enjoying it because of how much I love Sandland. I love Thief, just this exasperated, short little thousand-year-old demon thief who's like, why me? All the time. So, like, yeah.
I just love that his name is Thief.
It's just Thief, just straight up.
It's not his job, it's just his name.
What is he supposed to do, parents? Jesus Christ. Why would you do that?
Man. So, yeah, there you go. There's Sandland. Right. Not as long of a diatribe as I sometimes go on when I'm on the show about the games I played, but yeah, there you go.
Yeah. A couple smaller releases this week, but still significant. Eiyuden Chronicles 100 Heroes hit Game Pass and other platforms.
Speaking of deceased creators, same thing happened there. Yeah, the it's the Suikoden director, right?
Mm-hmm.
He passed away
a couple months ago, I think. Before, like, that's really sad when the creator or the director passes away, like, just before the game releases.
But it was one of the things where they were like, hey, like, this is, like, we're doing this in his honor now. And it's a similar thing for that crowd, like, that Suikoden crowd who is craving something like that. It's again. Yeah. It's like you couldn't ask for a more perfect thing being made for you.
Yeah, remind me what makes Suikoden special, Michael, because you've played a lot of those games.
Well, you can kind of guess it from the name of this game.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
How?
That you.
What? Wait. What?
Well, no, like, that was always Suikoden's big thing, that it was based on the story of the Water Margin, like this Chinese novel, and like that there are like 108 heroes that are recruited that all correspond to different stars. And that was transposed into the games. It was like, it's an RPG where you can recruit it was actually like 110, 112 characters, depending on the game, but at least 108 different characters who can be in your party.
Yep. In a turn-based RPG.
and have jobs in this fortress that you're gradually building up. But yeah, so 100 Heroes, Eidolon Chronicles, is unapologetically old school. It is a very old school RPG. It feels sort of like, I would compare it a little bit to like the HD 2D things that we've seen coming out recently. Like
I didn't play a ton of Octopath, but
like Octopath Traveler, Triangle Strategy, things like that.
But massive, crisp sprites on top of 3D moving background. This might shock you, because it shocks me. I didn't expect to have time to play this, but then like something got canceled, and like, well, I'll play. And then I went back in between, and now I had an hour break, and I played this for a couple hours. Yeah. And I've never played Suikoden, and I really liked it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You know, brings back random battles, but not with, like, you know, you'll just be wandering around the overworld and like, oh fuck, battle. But
it doesn't hurt as much when you have seven characters in your party and two of them can take most of the things down easily.
Yeah, the battles are fairly quick. They're not often enough to, you know, really break up the momentum. And yeah, it brings back Suikoden, like the classic, you know, 1 and 2 Suikoden battles where, like, you have 6 party members arranged, 3 in front, 3 in back. Formation matters in terms of what your characters can do. And, you know, the enemies are arrayed the same way. So it's like, you know, depending, like, it's going to be difficult for, like, one of the people in your back row to hit one of the monsters in the back row with, like, a melee attack.
But it's pretty good about if you take somebody out in the front row, the back row moves up and they auto-target.
Yeah.
I really like the comp. Like, it has anime trappings galore.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, everyone talks too much. And because I thought, like, man, they refined this. My anime characters just talk to me while I run.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah, sometimes they do that. A lot of the time it does, you know, freeze things for cutscenes.
Yes,
and that's
they do.
Fine. They're not as long as
it's not
some.
A deal breaker. It's just like, but I was shocked by how much I really did like this combat.
Yeah.
And yeah, as a free Game Pass game, no complaints. Good,
yeah, and
good.
And in terms of, like, you know, I mentioned the other HD 2D games. Like, this hooked me in a way that those did not. Like, this is immediately fun.
Yeah,
there's not much of a learning curve. You go through some cutscenes and you're doing exploration and battles within like the first 10-15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna say immediately hooked is very hard to do for an RPG specifically. Like, that's pretty significant thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was intentional, but did it kill your the main character, the character you are, immediately? Because it did for me.
No.
Like, before I really had a choice to do anything. And, but, you know, he was revived and kept on going, and he's just slightly behind leveling up everyone else. Hmm. But yeah, pure, fast JRPG nonsense. Love it.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Any characters who get knocked out in battle do not get to level up, or do not get the experience if they finish the battle without being revived.
It's almost a tradition. Yeah. Only a couple games recently have bucked that, but it's not a huge
loss. That feels
like
something game RPGs used to do, and not so much these days.
Well, Sea of Stars, I think, adhered to it.
Oh,
so
all right. Well,
it was one of our games of the year. I really dug it.
Yeah. No, Eidolon Chronicles 100 Heroes, it's a lot of fun. If you're a fan of, like, this, somebody said this feels like a direct sequel to Suikoden 1 and 2. Yeah, design-wise, definitely. If that style of game appeals to you, by all means, check this out. If you've got Game Pass, you already have access, so check that out.
And I woke up and saw you and Matt like, what the fuck does a JRPG mean anyway anymore? And I don't know that it needed an answer, but I was out on a walk and I wrote this in a pirate voice and I wanted to read it. Are there random battles? Then a JRPG, it tattles. Can you customize your charisma? Then a Western RPG, it isma. And now you know. Now you know.
Oh, that's better than what I came.
Oh, I wish we were. I wish we were jumping into news right now, because wow, do I have an incredible segue for one of the stories based on what you just did.
Well, pirate voice.
Well, yes. Please keep that in mind and just pretend we're time traveling later, because it's gonna be a good one. It's gonna be a hoot. I promise.
Yeah, the one that I came up with was, If the battle's random be, a J is in your RPG. If
is that dialogue- where I got it from? I was asleep because I didn't even read this conversation.
If dialogue's a frequent test, your game was crafted in the West. Yours was better.
Dialogue is meant to be endured in a JRPG, not manipulated.
Kinda, yeah.
Man, I want to write a haiku now for RPG. Oh, man.
All right. Well, one final release. Tales of Kenzera Zao is a Metroidvania-style game created by a new company founded by Abubakar Salim, who is the voice actor for Bayek in Assassin's Creed Origins. He's English-born, I think, guy of like Kenyan parentage, and he made the game. Basically, it's inspired by his grief after his father passing away, and so it's about this character who's a young shaman named Zao, and lives in the country of Kenzera. And his baba, his father, passed away, and he strikes a deal with the god of death, saying, "If I can find these three great souls that refused you before and bring them to you into the land of the dead, you'll give me my father back." And the god of the dead is like, you know, just this wise old man who's always accompanying you and is like actually really friendly and charming. And a lot of the dialogue is just between Zao and this death god. And it's I would say they call it Metroidvania style, and I would say that's accurate, because what I've played is actually fairly linear. Like, it's set in a Metroidvania style map, but like, you know, there are some like things
it's
to go
pretty
off
direct
the beaten path.
With
yeah, it's pretty direct. There's not a lot of like tools based exploration or reasons to backtrack and open new areas. You will find as you're like, if I go off this path instead of the main path, then I'll discover a collectible or a challenge area where I'll get like a rune that'll boost some attribute or whatever.
The power-ups you get, a lot of them, they're like masks. Is that correct?
The ones that I've got are runes. You have two masks at the beginning.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
The moon mask and the sun mask. And you can switch between them like by hitting LB or L, you know, that button is. And the moon mask is projectile based, so you can aim shots, and there's like a cooldown that you can expand, and you can also do like a what's the action reload, like from Gears?
Active reload.
Yeah, where like while it's cooling down, if you hit a button while it's in a certain place on the meter, then you'll like supercharge your shots for a little bit. And then the sun mask is all melee focused, so it's just you're doing close up combos, you know, light and hard attacks, etc., etc. So it's cool. There's that variety, and the story is fun. The characters are neat. It's a lot less grim than what I've said about death implies. Like, it is about grief, and it's about like, the character of Zao he's very impetuous. Like, he just like, let's get to the point. Let's get this quest done so I can get my father back. And the death god is like, you need to focus on the journey. You're being selfish right now. You only care about what you want.
Was death voiced by Adam Carolla? Like, no. Like, he isn't Family Guy?
By the way, women aren't funny. Yeah,
no. That's like that. Everything I've seen about this game has me excited.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I want to try it so badly, just have not had the opportunity. But when I do have the opportunity, it's free on PS Plus Essential. So,
oh, sweet.
There you go. Or whatever the mid-tier up is.
Extra. We keep getting this conversation, and they keep arguing with me. Essential, Extra, Premium.
Thank you. It's on Extra. It's free on Extra and Premium. And like I said, everything I've learned about this game over the past, you know, since it's been revealed, I'm just like, I want to play this so badly. So, good to hear it's doing well.
Yeah. So, check that out. In the meantime, we're going to change over to...
News out of Japan. News from Japan.
News from Japan.
I was going for my, like, you know, 1940s.
Yeah, Truman just dropped the bomb.
When
no
the
one
news
said they
was
could do
like
it.
In movie theaters, though, right?
The Enola
like,
Gay hey. Is on path.
Yeah, yeah.
The Enola Gay
Japan
is straight
on the moon.
The Enola Gay is straight on the path. Who wrote this copy?
A Japanese executive from Electronic Arts is criticizing the Japanese ratings board for apparently for a sort of a double standard, as he sees it. So they've allowed Stellar Blade to be sold uncensored. I guess that was one of the maybe one of the reasons there's controversy around this game is it's being promoted as this is being sold uncensored everywhere.
Well, yeah, but what that actually means, I think that relates to the violence in the game, which would typically be censored in Japan.
Which is what his complaint is, because you may have heard of another series that EA publishes, Dead Space was not allowed to be sold in Japan due to the violence. And so he was out there, I think this is on Twitter, here's his quote, "What's going on, Sero?" That's the Japanese ratings board. This is Sean Noguchi, by the way, saying this. This is a translation of what he said. "The Stellar Blade demo was really fun, absolutely action-packed. However, Sero, you denied our Dead Space a rating because it included cross-sections of severed body parts and internal organs. But here we have both cross-sections and insides on display passed off with a Sero D rating. I find this hard to accept." And so, yeah, Sero D is basically, that's M-rated. That's anyone age 17 and above can get that title. Anything other than that is given a Z rating, which is, I think, AO would be the equivalent here. And then if you don't get rated by Sero, they just, you can't sell your game in Japan. So Dead Space got above the Z. It's like, nope, sorry, unrated, can't sell it. And a lot of that has to do with, I think, cultural taboos around
beheading,
defacing corpses, right? It has to do with that. So, but I mean, he's not wrong. Like, why is one game allowed to be sold over the other? That's
because it's my theory, and not to sound racialist, Asian company, and not because they're an Asian company. It's just working in a Japanese company. I'm not throwing shade, but the time difference, every single interaction seems like a pain in the ass to everyone. And I bet those people, like, I bet the Korean company had times to argue their point while other people were in the office, where everything else has to take place in a delay with translators normally. To talk to Japan, we have to come in like 2 hours early or stay 2 hours late. Everyone is pissed all the time. Everyone, like, there is an edge to every single conversation. Whereas Europe has, we have a great relationship. Yeah, because you get to talk to each other while you're in the office at normal times. Because, like, even if you never saw that documentary about the MPAA, like, Spielberg not only argued shit that should never been on screen, he created his own rating, which is, in hindsight, is ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous. I know what the qualifications are that separate PG and PG-13. But they're still dumb. They're still really, really dumb. And it's like one F word and two nipples non-sexually. Like, Spielberg did this. Like, no one else is able to, like, get in there and argue with people. And it's tougher when you're on a different coast. And I imagine the Dead Space people probably fell up against that.
I thought that came about from the scene in E.T. where, didn't they call someone like a Vans deferens or something like that? They were referring to each
penis
other.
Breath. Penis breath.
Yeah, penis breath.
There's nothing like that, penis breath.
Penis breath. And even his mother laughed, like, I know what that smell is like. Elliot.
Also, that movie contains the word hell shit.
Hell shit, baby.
Ooh, that's the 13. There's the 13 in PG-13, dude.
Hell shit. You don't want your kids hearing that, unlike every Marvel movie?
And I've definitely taken a few. Speaking of Stellar Blade, I would like everybody... Well, Matt, you lay the story out, and then I'll throw in my little segue here.
Okay, well, so yeah, this is something maybe the ratings board should have been involved in. So, Stellar Blade publisher Sony promises to remove art that is currently in the game that could be interpreted as referencing racist language, which they're saying is unintentional.
Did you see it though?
It will be patched out.
I did, and this is why I wanted to segue from the pirate, because it says hard R.
Hard R.
So I wanted to ask you guys about that, because I know why. Yes, I get the racial implications when people nowadays say, hey, they're saying a word with the hard R.
Right.
But when I was growing up, when you would say a movie had a hard R, that was like, hey, that's an ultra violent, like exactly. It earned that R rating.
And
right?
that's still said today. So like I did see people getting upset about this on Twitter.
Well, that's the thing. I learned this extremely recently because Jeff Grubb of Giant Bomb was referring to some like movie, I mean, like within the last couple of months, and used the phrase referring to a movie, like, oh, the Wolverine, whatever, had a hard R, and there are a bunch of jokey replies to it. And I was like, oh, I guess that's taken on a little bit of a different meaning.
But I've only ever seen jokey replies like that. This is the first time that I saw people reacting to it like as though that's the intended meaning.
Yeah.
Well, because it's when it's there's no context around it, it's like, well, what was the meaning? But yeah, if you're Jeff Grubb talking about a movie and you say that has a hard R, everyone knows what you mean by that.
So what I'm saying is like that is how recently I learned of like the jokey hard R phrase, right?
That it can have other implications.
Right. Gotcha. Exactly. Gotcha. And I was like, oh, I did not realize. You know, and I mean, I'm a white guy with. You know, whatever level of privilege. So there you go.
A guy dressed in Rastafarian outfit, and then like, and then I got beaten up for just saying you're my. And the priest was like, maybe you should have gone softer on the R.
Yeah. Like, soften the R.
Oh man!
But like, I saw this, and like, this is clearly like, for lack of a better word, an AI overlap. This is not done intentionally, and what I.
I'm 50-50 on that, to be honest with you. I don't know.
I mean, I could see it being done intentionally with the other meaning.
No, hold on.
Non-racist meaning.
Hold on. Just for context, there are cafes all over the place. Your character...
Our shop. Yeah.
And there are also graffiti of the word hard everywhere because it's just been looped and stamped everywhere.
So you're saying we just got a texture overlap that resulted in this?
When they said it appears next to the R, like, it really doesn't. You have to stand way back in order to see it standing next to the R.
Out of 100 uses of that texture, this is the one
time. It doesn't look intentional. It is noteworthy, but we say it when, like... I love the increase in sensitivity in the internet, but also like this kind of shit. Like, guys, black people are not fucking aliens. They're not going to lose their minds over this. Like, it's just
let me tell you though, that graffiti that said crack next to the letter R, that one ruffled my feathers.
Yes, that one really got to me.
That's the one we ought to be calling up our lawyers about.
In the statement from Sony, like they're saying, like, hey, we didn't mean for this to be result in an unintentional objectionable phrase. Well, hold on, but like, if I were them, I think it was intentional, and I think it was a reference to like a movie, like a hard R. Like, why didn't they just say, hey, this is how we actually meant it? Like, we're still going to remove it, whatever, but like, this is how we actually meant it. So it is weird.
I guess it's not a difficult thing to do, but like. I do worry because I only worry sometimes about over corrections. It just gives actual racist fodder.
Well, it's a good thing fans of this game don't care about censorship whatsoever. They're not talking about
Oh, the actual racists out there who love this game, who I don't even want to fucking be in the same league with. But like, I think overcorrection to me is always preferred to undercorrection. So I'll take it. I will take it. But it doesn't look intentional in any way. And it doesn't look like anyone's really offended by it. And then now it's a news story. And, like, let's remember, we're all laughing at it because it doesn't mean anything awful. Yeah. Not genuinely.
Yeah. It's just strange.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And even out of context, like, that phrase, you don't say to someone, like, You hard R. Like, you don't say the phrase
hard R.
There's probably a third grade kid somewhere who said that, though. literally, in those words.
The first 42 years of my life as a full racist, and I never said that. So, like, but hard R always meant movie ratings, but I get that it doesn't translate across.
Yeah.
Yeah. Territory. Like I said, that is how recently I learned, like, people jokingly threw around, like, oh, no hard R's.
No,
you know?
I've heard that too, but it just, like, that's clearly not what's happening.
Right.
And but it's funny that it looks like it did. And it's sort of, oh, we got to correct this. The black community means the most to it. Like, calm the fuck down. Jesus Christ. Like, no one's really that offended by this. Fine. Take it out. All good.
Twitter must have been.
Twitter is constantly an overrepresentation of everything.
Well put. Anyway,
I mean, listen, it was weird that next to the graffiti was specifically a poster for Tropic Thunder, but what are you going to do?
All right. So next up here, Michael, I think this was a policy. Just like the lack of self-checkout is a direct result of Chris's actions. Michael, this one's on you, buddy.
No,
so
I think this is going above and beyond what I always do. But
Valve has closed a return policy loophole.
Oh, no, Michael.
That was apparently enabling people to play and complete games for hours and days at a time. And here's what I can't believe this was allowed to go on as long as it was. So if Valve has that policy, if you buy a game, you can play it. I think it's up to 2 hours.
Two hours.
You can return it.
Or 2 weeks, whichever comes first.
Right.
But Michael
wasn't
exploiting this loophole, by the way.
Well, so here's. But the loophole is if you bought like a version of a game, so usually like the expensive versions of games, like Suicide Squad, for example, right? That give you early access to a game.
Oh my god!
In that early access period, the timer didn't count. The timer only started after official release date of the game. So you
could have been returning special editions all this time.
That's hilarious! Oh my god! I hope everyone lost money on this.
It is genuinely hilarious to me that was even happening. Like,
this is one of those situations where everybody who got hurt deserves it. I love it. I love it.
Well, like, I read this headline. And I was like, wait, really? How do they? What an oversight!
There is now a special designation on the Steam shop that just says advanced access, kind of letting you know, like, hey, you're buying into this, and this is when your two-hour timer starts. So, yeah, this seems like kind of a big oversight that is getting corrected. Like, I can't fault them for fixing this policy. You know, I can't fault publishers for, like, wanting that policy to be fixed. Like,
I'm fucking pissed
fuck?
I didn't know about it.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been setting my Switch to New Zealand all this time. I didn't know about any of that shit.
Yeah, so sorry, Michael. They caught you, buddy. Let's see.
I never did that.
Another thing that some other people caught. So after nearly 20 years, Nintendo has issued a takedown notice to Gary's Mod all the Nintendo content.
Oh,
that
come
has been
on.
In there. So yeah, Gary's Mod is that it's kind of famously for two decades now been, it's like the inspiration of UGC in games. That it's a sandbox game where people put in stuff they've created or stolen, as we'll see in this story, that they were basically letting you like play with like really nicely rendered Marios in games that Mario is not supposed to be in, right?
Uh-huh.
So Nintendo sent a takedown notice so that Facepunch Studios, the developers, have to remove about 20 years worth of Nintendo content.
Utterly ridiculous.
Was Facepunch putting it in, or is this just stuff that's been?
No, they weren't.
It's users. It's users.
Yeah.
They
all right.
But they were. They just weren't moderating it. But I guess what I want to know is why now?
Yeah, why now?
20 years.
Why punish Gary's Mod now? I have to imagine there's a convert. Those guys are like, God, this is so fucking stupid. And one long-term employee is like, at least it wasn't 20 years ago. Because like, it's not like we're selling more Gary's Mod than ever.
I love the update, the official update on the Steam page from the dev.
Oh, God.
It goes, this is their words. Their words are, honestly, this is fair enough. This is Nintendo's content, and what they allow and don't allow is up to them. Like, geez, all right, yeah.
But I have to imagine that, like, you know, some high-ranking executive saw a YouTube video of, like, Mario farting or something like that in Gary's Mod, and like, no, this cannot be allowed to continue.
Only Wario may fart in his Ultimate Smash, and that is it.
Why did you make a kaiju out of Luigi Tub Girl?
I think that's what's weird is Nintendo is nothing if not known to be litigious, right? Mm. And so it's like, okay.
I hope the thing that triggered it was like someone added like Nabbit. Like a character
nobody
cares.
What we're not hearing reported is there's something in Nintendo's lawyer's eyes, because they probably see a ton of shit they don't actuate on. I hope that's a word. But
it is. I just don't think it works in that context.
But I have a feeling something. There was a straw that broke the camel's back,
right?
Because they were aware of Gary's Mod. They saw something, and what do you think that was? What do you think that was? I'm going to speculate. A bunch of new Princess Peach models hit.
Yeah.
Just
from the
hit the
recent
internet.
Game. Yeah.
That's what I'm going to speculate. But this is all silly. I'm sure you all know this. But Nintendo only exists as who they are because they exploited the exact same IP law against the owners of King Kong. And that is the lesson they learned. Like, never let us King Kong ourselves. We're gonna go against everybody.
Someone protect our trademarks.
We can cut this if you want. The Delta iPhone app, like that, absolutely. Apple just got rid of its emulator rule in the U.S.
That blows my mind.
It's actually like, this is a problem. and I'm like, well, how easy is it to download Nintendo games? Because
it's all right there.
Incredibly easy. It's like I can send friends. I can send my dad, who doesn't know how to send a picture, one link, and he can be playing Nintendo IP on his iPhone. And that hasn't been. Where's Nintendo on that? That's what I thought the story was going to.
We were loading Project 64 and ROMs in our like computer classes in like sixth grade. It's that simple.
It's insanely simple.
I'll say this though, like. The legality and stuff of emulators and all that stuff, I think it has been decided in courts maybe a few times, but like if you really want it to get decided, okay, well now you have a company like Apple changing their official policy and putting it up there. So like if you want someone with pockets deep enough to go after this, we're going to get a pretty definitive court finding on this if it becomes a lawsuit, right?
But I don't think Apple would fight that fight because they don't care about the Delta app necessarily, but somebody else won a lawsuit against Apple that you can't prevent this kind of software from. You can't tell me what I can put on my iPhone, what I can't.
That's what I don't understand is if you're Apple and you're trying to avoid lawsuits, why would you change your policy? Because there's no way for them to make money on it.
I did read a bunch of examples. So like, the only thing I'll start off with, how many of you played SumSum?
Yeah, I played that.
The Disney.
Do you remember how you downloaded it originally?
It wasn't from the Apple Store?
No, you had to be a subscriber to Line, the message service of Japan.
Right. Yeah.
And there are a bunch of third-party apps that allow internal downloads. And if Apple is allowing that, do we want to like regulate every single download? It's a lot of work. I don't know. I stopped reading the article. I don't have any information for you, but I think that was a part of it.
But I think doesn't Apple reserve the right? They can just refuse any app just out of their discretion. Like it's a private company.
Yes and no. That is defined differently in every territory. And I think Apple has been fighting the fight on putting emulate, because they don't want to fucking people to get free games on their phones. They want to sell you games.
Exactly.
And they want to make money off your games. But they lost so many court battles, it just became like, well, we're just not going to fight this internationally anymore because only America is left with this law. Because I think you could always download these emulators in the EU through a third-party app. But, like,
they still have standards, though, because I don't
they
think...
They do.
There's no, like, porn apps on iPhones. I'm asking you, Chris. You would know.
Off mic, they call me the queen of panel. And I don't know that, Matt, because I think the App Store can't offer that. But I remember downloading Line, like you can download something through an app. 10 years ago, that was restricted in America for a long time. They lost the battle in Japan, and that was just allowed.
Yeah, there was something recently with like the whole Xbox streaming, right? Like they had to do streaming. They couldn't do it through an app, and then finally Apple had to change their policy. Yeah, so maybe this is related to that.
I think they lose those monopolistic battles for people who actually care about businesses in places where capitalism doesn't get to run amok. Yes, like it's other territories that have ended up defining this. That Delta app is insane. I'm not telling you what to do because I know my partners don't like me to encourage emulation, but it's free and it's almost silly.
I will say the best thing that I can say about that app, other than its ease of use, is that the haptic feedback on the controller feels
amazing.
Pretty good. Like, that is the next best thing to having a controller actually popping out of the screen.
I would like to go on record. This is Matthew Allen stating that the only Delta I endorse is Delta Burke. Let's be honest. Golden Girl Delta Burke. No.
She seems so happy. A designing woman.
Designing woman Delta Burke. That's the one.
Designing
she gets
woman.
My full endorsement.
But like that's the news story I felt like went under the radar, and I tried to follow it. Like, what got Apple to reduce those restrictions in America? I don't know, because America is still a bigger market than almost every other market. But we we don't have a lot of third-party apps that allow downloads of anything.
Right.
And that is coming. That is coming for us.
I'll just say it's nice that all of you guys finally caught up to the Android crowd over here. We've had emulators since the beginning.
This is true.
I can promise you this emulator looks and plays so good.
Oh, it looks... I agree. It's amazing. I agree. It is pretty awesome. Yeah.
It is amazing. Like, I even thought about, like, this is much better than any emulator on any computer I have in my house.
I still want to plug in a controller, though.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. It's
which you can! You can plug in a PlayStation Bluetooth controller.
That's true. There is a Bluetooth option. You're right.
That's been a thing for a while. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's only does Nintendo emulation, though, right?
NES, I think, right now, but the Delta emulator...
It's like up through GameCube, isn't it?
It does everything up to GBA. No, I think GBA. GameCube is still like, I think...
I know really it does DS, although you have to download the BIOS.
Yes. Mm. And if you never emulated anything, the BIOS stuff is the worst part. Mm. It was this odd legality thing that have kept those things online, despite ROMs being very easily taken down.
Yeah.
Emulators are different, and Nintendo has not bested that yet. So,
as a man who deals in a series that has some retro roots, I hope you all brick your iPhones. Have fun.
It does feel like I've never felt like I've been doing something very wrong on my iPhone before.
Like, how is this legal?
Yeah, it took over 10 years.
And that is the exact feeling Nintendo's lawyers got when they decided to remove content from Garry's Mod. They said,
maybe they're distracted with the Garry's Mod thing, but their lawyer sense is tingling right
away. Yeah, like when you clued me in about it, I was like, Nintendo's lawyers are working for the weekend. Holy shit. Like, they are coming in on the weekend to figure this thing out.
And I don't remember how it works, so, like, download it just in case. Never download a game to it. Go get that Delta app, everyone. Let's see what it's... Because for the first time ever, in 1 second, when Michael is talking about an NES game I've never played, in 1 second, it is played on my OLED iPhone very, very quickly. It's almost less time than it takes to pull up a YouTube feed of it.
That's why you start arguing about what's in the first level.
Yeah. Shit. I think I got my whole persona called out. Maddie, anything else?
Yeah, last bit of news. I love Mortal Kombat, and I love that the development team still does stuff that they've been doing since, well, you were talking about some of those Mortal Kombat kind of secrets like Toasty earlier on the show. So apparently the developer Stealth dropped a secret brutality that all characters can use that players have slowly been discovering. This is amongst a bunch of other secret brutalities they've been discovering in the game. So in this brutality that works for every character, you have to deplete your opponent's health bar with a back throw that sees your character launch their foe straight into the game's camera. And then you have to hold up and back punch after performing the throw to do that. I gotta give another realm credit. Like, they still do this shit that, like, most other games, they're not putting in secrets and letting the community discover it over time, you know?
Right. And like, also to their credit, the things that were important about Mortal Kombat 30 years ago are still important now. When I'm playing through Blasphemous, like, almost every character has an exploitable fatality, which is not something we mentioned in talking, well... Blasphemous is filled with fatalities. Way to like kill.
I think you said that. Yeah.
Just murder enemies like that. It's still like, I'm a child. This is still so fucking fun. Why wouldn't it still be fun in Mortal Kombat? Hell yeah.
Well, and I think this was tied to the season 5, just started season 5 Storms, which is basically Raiden is like the final boss of that board game mode they have in there.
And also Neptune.
And the DLC character Ermac is there. And
thank God he's canon.
Yeah, indeed. Yep. Indeed. Go find your secret brutality. It's waiting for you there in Mortal Kombat 1, which, if you're like me, has been taking up 160 gigs on your hard drive because you want all the DLC characters.
So. Yes, correct.
It's huge, man, but it's a good game. And that is all the news that's fit to play.
Fatality.
All right, let's move on to our community segment, which is always segmenting our community. Last week's question of the week was, is there a video game movie in development or in development hell? that you're looking forward to seeing. Tony, you weren't here last week. Is there any project that particularly floats your boat?
You know, I am just curious to see Metal Gear. That's one that's been passed around. And what's his name? The King Kong director? King Kong?
Peter Jackson. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, is apparently doing that. So I'm interested. But one thing, honestly, that came to mind, and I don't know if this quite qualifies, but like I'll bring it up because it's fun, is that random like Crash Bandicoot cartoon intro that was unearthed a couple years back. And I don't remember where it landed. If it was, oh, this is like a lost animated opening, or no, this actually is like a lost cartoon.
It was in-game content.
That's what it was. Thank you.
That was meant to emulate...
A Saturday morning cartoon kind of thing. Yeah.
I'd say the Fox Kids.
Yeah.
And it was so, meant to be like, if we develop an animated series based on this, this can serve as the template for that.
Exactly. So I would have loved to just, I would love to see what that could be. I mean, Bubsy got a show.
Oh,
got a pilot.
Yeah, a pilot. Yeah. If Bubsy gets a full pilot, Crash Bandicoot deserves
a pilot. If Earthworm Jim can have a full season of a show.
Yeah. Yeah. And his own line of action figures, which Crash Bandicoot also had, to be fair.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah. All right. Well, on Facebook, on the official Laser Time community on Facebook, Bree Stafford says, my basic bitch answer is Legend of Zelda, as it always is when that series can be an answer. However, I have heard inklings that a Mega Man movie is in development hell. And yes, that's something I would be first in line to go see if it ever comes to fruition. Like Mario, there's enough lore and iconic imagery to make a compelling and fun movie, but there's also... with enough flexibility to change a few things to make the series more movie-like. Hell, I'll even be happy with a Mega Man movie that uses the English voice actors from Mega Man 8 for the dialogue at this point.
Oh, God, Michael.
Yeah, Dr. Wowie forever.
Michael, we got to find that as you immediately, Mega Man.
Mega Man. I would say... check out Ian Flynn's comics. Those are the coolest things I have ever seen.
Oh, you mean Sonic writer Ian Flynn?
Sonic writer Ian Flynn, who also wrote the Mega Man Sonic crossover. But the Mega Man comics are like this ultra dramatic version of Mega Man who still fights the bosses in the right order to find out what is used against the... like, I fell off of it, but it was like a beautiful comic.
Happy to report, been on several calls with Ian. He's a cool dude, Chris.
I love that, too.
I will say, for a Mega Man comic book rabbit hole to fall down, look up the Brazilian Mega Man comic, which makes inappropriate sexual jokes, is mostly gag-driven, and after a couple of issues, like the guy writing it basically admitted he wanted to supplant it, kill off Mega Man, and replace it with his own character, Princess, so that he could use its clout to reach a greater audience.
And does Brazilian Mega Man shave his pubic hair in a different way or wear his robot costume high up on his hips?
No, he still got the V.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, it does have a weird thing where, like, Mega Man meets X and they're, like, two distinct beings.
I remember a buddy I worked with from Brazil would send me pictures of that and, like, this could be apocryphal, Brazil had set in a bunch of, you know, you can't just import your business over here. It has to benefit Brazilians. So if you're not willing to build a game company over here and develop your game, video games come in mostly through the black market, and Mega Man really stood aloft. So in the mid-2000s, he would send me pictures of, like, 500-minute cell phone plan, Mega Man, is just being like a widely recognized character who wasn't being regulated by Capcom. So it was like, it was huge in Brazil, but like 20 years after it was huge here, Mega Man was a huge character.
I want you to know I'm 100% reading this comic right now as a person who understands Portuguese.
Oh, okay.
I'm like you said. I didn't know this existed, but now I'm just straight up reading it over here.
Yeah. Isso não é porque você parece um hobo.
What's that mean? I'm a hobo.
This is like not this is not because you look like a robot. Oh, sorry.
Isso não é porque você parece um hobo. Hobo. Yeah. I guess, depends on your
I
accent.
Get it. You're a hobo like that.
Yeah,
like
hobo. I'm getting tired.
fair enough.
Não precisa andar como tá tal. Fui programada para ir proteger e sei que os nossos inimigos estão de olho em um sujeito azul.
Blue.
Blue. There you go. There you got blue.
Blue. It's not blue. On Facebook, mega top contributor Leonardo Chavez says, I would guess Pikmin will see a film as Miyamoto ventured into making short films using the Pikmin in 2014. They were really funny. Will Illumination making Nintendo animated films having a little army of creatures that cause chaos and barely speak? Is there bread and butter storytelling with the Minions franchise? Did you know they have been making an almost daily Pikmin comic strip for over a year?
What?
Did not. Practice for storyboarding a film or Miyamoto's deep love for these little characters. They are stem cells, like the Minions. Like they, you can throw them in any situation.
Yeah, do whatever
they will adapt
want
to it.
Like the rabbits.
Comedically.
Yeah.
Well, there it is, right that there, sandwiched between Blondie and Andy Cap. There's the Pikmin comic I've been missing all these years.
Once again, I'm predicting Nintendo is too difficult to deal with. They've made Minions movies that have made almost as much of the Super Mario movie. This is a very tenuous relationship.
This reminds me of my favorite comic strip from that is called Pikmin's Model, and it ends with the phrase, "It was a picture drawn from life!"
I don't get the reference, and I want to so bad.
All I can think about is how... All I can think about is how Pikmin and Zippy have the same, like, head structure. The thing
Zippy,
on top of
your... Don't get me started on Gasoline Alley. Not on this show.
From the Bisky, Braden Marks says, I'm still waiting on the Splinter Cell movie that had a teaser trailer on Splinter Cell Chaos Theory on the OG Xbox. Then in 2012, Tom Hardy was attached to play Sam Fisher, and I think that was the last we heard of the Splinter Cell movie. It disappeared, much like Sam Fisher in Splinter Cell.
It's sort of bullshit, but I do want to say, just to elaborate on an off-mic situation and a mild movie recommendation, very rarely do my friends like Matt and Michael and Tony take my recommendations, and I was just like, Late Night with the Devil is really cool, and Michael
it's
just
so
texts
good.
Me, he's like, Is that Michael Ironside? I'm like, it is. Sam Fisher lives. And he's narrating this horror movie.
What a great movie that was.
I know it has its flaws, but as a low budget horror movie, like fucking brilliant.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yes. It made the most out of that low budget.
Yes. One set, brilliant. Late Night with the Devil. Fucking awesome. With Michael Ironside, who I also said, when is that Michael Ironside? I'm like, yeah, I saw him in something recently. I forget which movie it was. He does not look well. He looks very
probably in Top Gun, right?
He was in Turbo Kid. I remember that he was the villain.
No, it was like in the last year or two. I don't.
Well, I think he did. I think have an illness at some point.
He looks very very old.
Yeah. Hmm. Am I reading Wolf Studios art? Is that where we are?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Wolf Studios Art says, I'm interested to see if the Metal Gear Solid movie is a masterpiece or a complete dumpster fire. I love Kojima, and of all the gaming auteurs, he's the one whose work is the most cinema-inspired. But can you imagine asking him to put all of MGS into a two-hour screenplay? That's barely a single codec scene.
Yes, correct.
Why do people assume he'd be involved? Like, he can't touch anything MGS anymore.
That's true. Konami. He doesn't own it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say I think the ones that would adapt well to a movie might be like the original MSX, like the 8-bit games, because those did not have the ridiculously complex storytelling.
You should put in an asterisk the only storylines that could be adapted into a movie.
Yeah,
because it would have to, like, a streaming series, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah, you got to give Metal Gear room to breathe. You can't just do it as into.
Got to have the boss fight at the end of every episode. I'd watch that.
Because the best answer to retort to this is a man riding a woman riding a motorbike whose question of the week answer is no.
Got to call them out on that. So like, dude, this isn't 15 years ago when video game adaptations are bad. Like, we've been blessed with good adaptation after adaptation. Like,
I know what you're saying, and as the Sonic guy, you deserve the most credit, because Sonic is, like, not adapting its story. It's doing something different. Game stories are not the most important things to get, and they're supplemental to a bunch of other things. And none of those other supplemental things can movies deliver at all as a medium. It's why I say, like, what do you want to see? Like, when we saw the Borderlands screener, like, at least it's, like, constantly funny, whereas Borderlands is, like, a series that always tries to be funny.
But this is getting to be, like, newscaster equating video games with Pac-Man level of, like, outdated reference, where it's, like...
No, I don't mean to say that.
We have The Last of Us, we have Fallout now, we have the Sonic movies, the Mario movie was good. There, we have more recent examples of good video game adaptations than bad.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying, like, but this is like people getting excited over novelizations of Blaster Master. There's no way.
The novelization of Blaster Master was fucking excellent.
Yeah. Right. We have one guy.
You don't know what
here.
That fucking frog was thinking until you read about it, because you can't do that on the screen.
I'm done.
It was much better than FX9's adaptation of Simon's Quest.
It's a different medium. There's nothing to be gained because games are already grandeur for the most part. Like, especially modern ones.
I just want to remind people, it's about two decades, so it's kind of far away, but, like, we've come so far since the mid-2000s of, like, Gerard Butler Gamer, the movie era shit, right? Of, like, a literal movie based on, like, if you die in the game, you die in real life, or whatever the shit. Like, come on.
No, I'm saying, like, the medium of film. Jerry Seinfeld had a great quote this week. He's like, what's it like to make a movie? And he's like,
movies are dead.
He did say that. He's like, movies are no longer the most dominant cultural force in pop culture. And I'm like, why did it take Jerry Seinfeld to say that?
Well, here's my retort to him. Jerry Seinfeld, your hair follicles were dead. And you have a full head of hair now, my friend.
I saw him live twice, and he is way less bald. He is Jeremy Piven PCU levels less bald than I saw him before. But also, like, he's right. We were talking about that last week, that like, this felt like some legitimacy. Oh, my God, it's going to get a movie? And now I see this shit. Like, you should be bored by this.
Yeah, this is always going to be a pale imitation of what the game offers.
And again, like, even the Mario movie, like, it took a different stance. We're going to remake the Mario universe. Sonic, like, none of that could be replicated in a game. It's just for the movies. The D&D movie, like, it's original to the movie. Like, it's not a direct adaptation of things. That's neat, but, like...
Yeah. Well, I think... the best game adaptations are like video games can have some very cool universes that you can tell cool stories in those universes, like the Fallout TV series, right? Aping the events of any one Fallout game.
You're right.
That's just like, yeah, this is the, but also
ideally that's what
also,
a BioShock
you can also
movie
have something like
too.
The Last of Us. That's literally the events of,
I love Fallout for its premise, its conceit. I don't care at all about its gameplay. I don't like it. But I've always loved what it's starting from, and the series has really drawn me in. So you're right. You're right.
I'm wrong. I have one episode left. I gotta finish it.
Maybe we can finish this show and you can do it.
Yeah, let's wrap this up. Whose turn is it to read Jeff Wildman?
Did Chris just move us along? What the?
It's very strange. Like, I'm not used to this either.
Jeff Wildman says. I just mentioned this, actually. I was excited for a BioShock movie. I was actually bummed that it was going to be a series. But now I've come to realize how stupid I was. If we've learned anything from recent releases, not you, Halo, video game adaptations need room to breathe. And TV is the place for them.
I think that's correct, but, like, my personal, like, why do I want to re-experience my love for this video game in 90 minutes, not 80 to 90 hours.
Halo should have been a movie, now that I think about it, because the stuff that people don't like about the games is repetitive levels that last too long and go on and on. And it's like, yeah, all that shit would be cut from a movie. You can't have that.
Yeah.
Take the events of games 1 through 3, just tell that as one story in a 2-hour movie, you're probably fine. Like, it might actually
but
be okay.
But conversely, you can dig into the Halo lore and make a show that Halo fans think is amazing. No human being will ever watch that in the universe.
it's so weird.
I told my dad, like, did you like Chernobyl? did you like Chernobyl? He was talking about Chernobyl. I love mm-hmm. Chernobyl. I'm like, that guy wrote a show. It's called The Last of Us. And I don't want to tell you anything else because I think you won't watch it if I tell you it's based on a video game. Mm-hmm. And then when I went over to his house today on my mother's birthday, he's right. You told me about some show, Last of. That was it. That's all he wrote in the notebook. He wrote Last of. Last of? What? Last of, because I do, but I do think Last of Us is a show my dad would enjoy, but he can't get over the hurdle that it's based on a video game.
Oh, that's sad. That sucks, man.
I mean, he's 75. He'll be dead in a month. It doesn't matter.
Why do they call it Last of when you last of the hot food yeah, and he, of out the cold food?
He is the last boomer, the last good boomer.
All right. New question of the week. We debated the sequels that nailed it in our top five. What games did we miss? This is your chance to weigh in once again. Which game do you think really nailed it in a series? The game that perfected existing gameplay, that really kind of, like, this is the definitive version of that. Yeah. It was great before. This redefined it.
I better see some goo is in chat. Mm-hmm.
Some goo.
Yeah, every time you do that, I think you're talking about a Goof Troop.
Yeah, I think you're going to start talking about Kingdom Hearts.
Gorsh, no.
Like, can you really say that any of those improved on the first game?
I can do a pitch perfect Kingdom Hearts impression with Goofy. Right. You ready? Donald! Because Donald's always yes. dead. Always Dude, dead.
Right on. Anyway, here's Donald! The distinction, right? Okay, here's the distinction. Banjo-Kazooie is...
Mm-hmm.
Goofy is...
Uh-huh.
There you go. So I better see some...
Go-huh?
In chat. And by the way, that's really hard to do in pluralize. You're welcome.
But we sort of said ours. The only... One of the things I wanted, like, we're not all live Street Fighter fans, and I feel like fighting game fans have a lot to talk about here. So I encourage
yeah,
you to
I am
do
very,
so.
That is, I'm very out of my wheelhouse with fighting games, so yeah, go for it, FGC.
I have always wondered what is viewed as the best version of Street Fighter 2 out right. of 18
like,
of them.
Right, I know it's not Mario Kart. It's not like the latest version is the best, other than Mario Kart Wii. But, yeah, like, the Street Fighter was a hard one, but it's involved in the conversation, so I'd love to hear from you guys about what you think.
I mean, I'll give you my answer. EX yeah. plus Alpha. That fucking game rules. You smirch.
That's Matt wanting to dress like Skullomania every year. That's
EX
all
plus
that
Alpha
is.
Was a fine game. People
yeah, no, it was a lot of fun.
Is I think that's Alpha with the most unbelievable like 2D animation. Is that because it's not when it went 3D, right? Oh no, not Alpha. No, so it is
EX
3.
Is.
I'm
EX
thinking.
Is
I'm
the
thinking.
3D.
Of, all right, so I'm thinking of Street Fighter 3, which is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Like it was, 2D, it
the,
is
the CPS 3 board with the extra frames of animation.
Just yeah, the like just this the idle animations of everybody just kind of like moving back and forth. It's incredible. It's genuinely, I think, maybe the best animation I've ever seen in a video game.
Yeah, it's really odd to think that like there was a period where like how does Street Fighter survive in a 3D world? Oh my god, it can't work. And there was that notion for like 5 years.
3D animation on a 2D plane, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with an obvious answer that we haven't hit on. Marvel vs. Capcom 2.
Okay.
Fantastic. It was a fantastic fighting game that took that character switching thing to new heights and let you unleash gigantic super attacks as Cable.
I mean... Have you been to an MVC2 tournament? Cable is always there. Always there with
He's
you.
A fun
I see
character.
You with your MSPs or whatever, your fucking Magneto Storm Psylocke.
Yeah.
I see you.
All right. Someone else.
Oh, I thought we already answered in our debate.
We have already answered.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess
people know my answer. Okay. I'm just over here staring at Street Fighter 3 right. sprites now.
Fair enough. So what games did we miss in our top five? What would you have put in there?
I really want to know, because this was hard to Google. Because most of the people who made like a most improved sequel were like, this game sucked, and then it got good. Like, I was more looking at like things that were great and got somehow better, miraculously.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. So let us know. Go to the official Laser Time community on Facebook. There'll be a thread there where you can answer. Or ping us on Twitter, Threads, or Blue Sky at VG Apocalypse. And we will read the answers on next week's show. That has been our show. Chris, did you have anything else you wanted to say about it?
The show?
About that that topic.
It should change, and the format, the host should leave and retire.
Oh, okay, I'll do that.
Oh, good news, I'm not back next week, so there you go.
Matt just blinked and looked around. It was a really good physical take. no, patreon.com/lasertime, framework for Tony.
Yeah, but Tony, he'll explain it plugs. Further.
Yeah, go to youtube.com/frameworkvideo. That's what I'm going to plug. It's my channel. It's got a bunch of videos. At this point, I definitely feel like I can guarantee you I've covered a game that you like. And I'm really proud of the work. Please go watch it.
You'll find something you love on Tony's YouTube channel, guaranteed.
Yes.
Thank you. Plenty more ideas in the pipeline. And then thank you all for having me on. I always enjoy coming by.
Well, thank you for volunteering.
Yeah, you know, time zone wise, it's exhausting, but it's worth it.
Well, that's what I like about Tony and Framework is that you kind of only do stuff you're excited about. And you don't like, this is the Suicide Squad is the worst game. Tony doesn't have those on his YouTube
channel. It is about positivity. And beyond that, I try to, like, listen, I'm not like scholarly level in depth with this stuff, but I try to go a few levels deeper in and think about it.
If it doesn't have a dude in his 20s or 30s with a beard smacking his forehead because he's upset about a video game, that's a no sale for me.
I never want to watch a YouTube video about video games unless a guy paces back and forth in front of his NES shelf before he starts talking.
Dude, all I'm saying is the girl is still play. She's got great boobs, and that's a good game to me. I got includes toaster, too close to saw the chin
all
hands
I'm
on
saying
Aloy's
is I never
face,
want to grow
done.
Up, and I don't want anything to grow with me.
Got to give Tony props for his amazing thumbnail restraint on YouTube. Mm. He's not playing that YouTube thumbnail game of like, what?
No,
outrage
and it's
face?
It's killing me in the algorithm. So please go watch.
No, man,
it's better than that garbage.
I had a conversation with someone about that recently. Like we always kind of highlight. It's not that we're trying to be ultra positive. We're not all the time. Mm-mm. But why would we want to talk about things that don't interest us and yell about them? It's absurd. And that's what the algorithm is on the whole internet.
And
God
straight up, like, I love, like, there are a lot of great, authentic channels out there on YouTube that I love watching and I enjoy it. But a lot of those really big ones that you like, they do not care about what they're actually talking about.
Yes,
they do
not
care one bit about the info they're presenting in those videos.
They are Ben Shapiro complaining about a Barbie movie, looking very bored and can't believe this is their job.
Oh, I don't even mean that. I'm just talking like the generic content farm ones that are out there. Just like, this video is about the craziest serial killer. I'm like, you don't care. You just picked the topic. This is not something you're actually passionate about. Yeah. So if you want to watch videos, you know, about someone who, not about someone, they're not about me. That's the other thing. They're not about me. I'm in them. I voice them. This channel is not about me. It's about the games. If you want to celebrate the games, check out Framework.
You play that SEO game, but you don't dick ride SEO by any means. You know what I mean?
No. I try to be timely, but I'm not obnoxious. Anyways, I don't want to toot my own horn. YouTube.com/frameworkvideo. Go check it out. I'm proud of the work, and I would love more people to see it. So there you go.
If you want to watch me toot my own horn, I have an OnlyFans.
Again with that. That was a good one.
I don't have an OnlyFans.
It's just Michael writing a Sibian dress as Tingle. It'll never change.
It's just me talking up my own work. That's it.
Just a self-rusty trombone. Like,
if Michael
on a Sibian,
right
there,
you should read this Assassin's Creed interview. It's so broad.
And in my case, if you go to my OnlyFans, you can watch somebody until he goes all day.
Oh, nice. I'm turning to the Bottles again because of that reference.
Bottles is the name of the mole in Banjo-Kazooie.
So it is.
What? Why did you feel the need to? You're the only one who understood the reference, and you had to see. You had to head on to it for some reason.
Yep.
All right.
I'm going to take this bullet out of the gun I fired. I got it.
All right. Well, that's been our show. As always, you can...
His brother is Sergeant Jam Jars.
There, Michael, you're no longer Wiki Paris.
Fine. I've been Wiki Wilsoned.
I love how fast he is to like abdicate that at like 4 hours in.
Sure.
Whatever. Take my wife. I don't care.
I don't care. Let's grind this down. Anyway. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, Threads, Blue Sky, at VG Apocalypse. Follow me personally at Wikiparaz, WIKIPARAZ. That's been our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
I don't remember any quotes from this movie, but I'm a dirty, rotten scoundrel.
I had the titular line in a movie I can't remember. Matt just brought up.
What are we, some sort of Suicide Squad?